KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We're going to do tonight, if we have any luck. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight on this wonderful radio station. Beaming out to you from mid-Missouri here, Columbia, Missouri, as it were. 89.5 FM, 36,000 plus watts from here to there, wherever you are in mid-Missouri. Hope you listen, and if you are, we say hello to you tonight. And it's a pleasure to be with you here. Before we get going with things, let me say a quick thank you to my good friend, Debbie Johnson. As always, wonderful stuff on Free Range Radio Theater, 1 hour before this program gets rolling, 10 p.m. every Monday. Debbie does it up, and great stuff coming to you just before this program every week. Monday's 10 p.m., Free Range Radio Theater. Before that, Kelvin and Jason doing it up, jazz plus blues equals secret moon mission. Tech Radio, always keeping us up on the fast-moving world of high technology and funky gadgetry, all kinds of funny stuff those guys are talking about tonight. I love the Tech Radio guys, Kyle, by the way. My friend Kyle just walked in. I don't have his mic on, but I'll turn it on in a second if I figure it out. I'll turn them all on. That's what I do. I just turn them all on these days. Figure that he'll be the one.
There's like 12 microphones in here.
I don't even know where
some of them are.
There you go.
They're hidden in places.
We'll have to have Matt grab that other one. That's number four.
You know, there's
four.
Three of those Tech Radio guys now.
I know. There's a new guy that I haven't been introduced to. There's John, there's Justin, and then there's this
mystery man.
The mystery guy.
I think Bruce, maybe? He's a good guy.
Really?
I've met him.
You know, whenever there's like a threesome, you always forget the third guy. Like the, or the third girl, whatever
the third
it is.
Whatever, yeah. That thing
it's
was.
Like the Three Sopranos. Everyone knows, you know,
I always forget
Pavarotti.
The
and then
third
there's,
thing involved.
Hell, I just forgot. I only know one. I don't even
I
know.
I think it was Babe Ruth and I forget the third one. Curly, that's right.
Ah, yes.
The famous.
The infamous Curly.
I think they put the wrong numbers on these things just for fun.
This one's on over here,
I don't
too.
Think that really is number two.
I just found this microphone.
Okay.
Here it
all
is.
Right, so professional radio at its worst is not what you're going to hear tonight.
No.
You're going to hear a great radio show, and we're going to start right now. Jeff Wheeler. I shouldn't mention Jeff before I say anything else. Jeff starts things off. Uncommon Light, 3 to 5 p.m. every Monday. Good music, good talk, good news. Kicking radio.
And always a stellar weather report.
Ah, yes, yes. You can always find at least a 50% accurate weather report here.
Well, temperature is Sanborn Field.
Tonight, dark with a chance of light towards morning.
A very good chance of that.
We hope. Let's see. Yeah, KOPN, your imagination station. Okay, glad to be here with you. Thanks to everyone who joined in last week, Richard Allen Miller in particular. Thanks for returning to the program, Rick, and sharing with us some of the remarkable information that's kept in the encyclopedia inside that guy's head. He's amazing, and I'm sure we'll have him back on the program again, and we'll do some more of the same. Okay, if you missed the show, it's on the web, www.mikehagan.com. Check out the program archives, and you can listen in and share it with your friends if you like. Okay. All right, tonight, the Bard, Kent Stedman from cyberspaceorbit.com. We'll have Kent with us at the top of the hour. We'll also feature the music of my friend Matt Presti, who's actually here with me in the studio.
Hello.
Yeah, you got a mic there? Okay.
There he is.
There he is. He's hiding behind my big fancy computer screen here. We'll have music from Matt, and we'll talk with him in just a little bit here and play a bunch of his music tonight. We started things actually with a song that has to be the most requested song that I've ever played on this show. I don't get many requests, first of all. Because, you know, but
well,
that song Shine that
I play independent music.
Yeah, and but I've had more people request that song Shine or ask information about it or whatever. I bet you've gotten a lot of downloads because people have said a lot to me about that song. So anyway, it's a great song, one of many that Matt has.
Can I say one thing real quick? You're a lucky man because our number one requested song on our show is Dancing Queen by ABBA.
Ah, yes, I know. You guys are still stuck there. Well, it's a great song, but, we should say hello to Kyle, by the way, who is.
Hello.
Kyle is Kyle, of course, of.
I think that may be me, actually.
Is it you?
I'm nothing but
to make
bad luck.
Feel important.
I told my mom to call me if she heard
Kyle has his own phone number programmed in like the number one speed dial, so he just hits it whenever
it's me again.
Whenever he wants to feel important.
I'm calling
and then
myself.
He calls himself, and people think he's hot when he's on the radio and stuff. So anyway, he does a great show on Saturday nights, early Sunday morning, called Mystery Science Radio 3000. Kyle and
it's a terrible show.
It's outrageous. It's great, actually.
Yeah, it's usually me and me and Tony, and then whatever other 10 people decide to show up.
Yeah, the doors are usually open
after the bar is closed.
And it's always an alchemical mix, that's for sure. So anyway, yeah, you get it all from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. on Sunday mornings with Mystery Science Radio 3000, Kyle and Tony, and the rest of the gang. So
thank you.
You're welcome. And so Kyle's just saying, and I think we'll probably have some other people visiting with us in the studio tonight, so we have sort of a not a real formal show tonight. We got Matt here, Kyle's hanging around for a little while. I think Will and Morgan might be here in a little bit. But anyway, as I said, the song Shine, great song. Matt, thank you for sharing it. And like I say, lots of people love it. I get all kinds of people talking about it.
Thanks, Mark.
So that's what I wanted to start the show with. We'll play more from Matt in just a bit here. And by the way, information about all of these wonderful musicians that that we feature on the program here can be found on the web at the site in the Music Archives. So just go over there to MikeHagan.com and click through to the Music Archives, and you can find information about Matt and all the other people that have been featured on the show over the last year or so. And, you know, it's easy to get in touch with them, too. And I always say, you know, communicate with us and them and whoever. I'm sure
this is the age of communication.
Isn't that the truth? Do you like do you like hearing from people that listen to your music?
Oh, yeah.
Even if they don't like it?
Yeah. I haven't heard much negative feedback.
Well, good. I mean, of course, you'd rather have the good stuff.
I'm a critic of myself.
That's true. I know. I say worse stuff about me than
exactly.
Most other people do. Yeah. Even though they think they're insulting me. It's like, yeah, that's not
I only compliment myself, so... I'm in a different boat there.
Man, now I know why I'm so into this guy.
I'm the man.
He is. One of them, at least.
I am a man. I
a
am not
talking
the
monkey.
Man.
Another one of those monkeys. All right, Kent Stedman, like I said, tonight, just a little while. And I tell you what, let's play another song from Matt Presti here. And then we'll come back and do... I don't know. We'll do space weather. I got a few announcements about some interesting people that have either passed or were born with anniversaries over the last couple of days. And we'll do space weather and that whole business. You guys still doing space weather?
We do it when you least expect it.
Yes, if you want to mystery science space weather, you'll get that too sometime on
every
Sunday
once in a while. You'll get our space weather.
And it's wonderful. It's worth hearing. So, all right, we'll do that in just a little while. In the meantime, Matt, let's see. What should I play here? Should I play one of your new ones?
Yeah, sure.
How about the one that I have audio one too, but it's actually called...
Road to Heaven.
Road to Heaven, yeah.
I like that.
All right, now this is new music that Matt has written and is performing, or is writing, I should have him clarify, but with a couple other guys from St. Louis, Jeff Schneider, I think, on guitar.
Correct.
And Mike Coulter plays the drums.
Yes. Jeff's the architect behind the music, but we're writing some original stuff that's coming together. That's
okay,
new,
all right. And how,
it's kind of like I came into the fold and added bass and
awesome.
Vocals.
And you're doing vocals, too.
Right.
Okay, and you guys are doing some stuff in a studio in St. Louis?
Right, Accent.
Accent.
You can go to accent.tv, and it's A-X-E-N-T.
All right.
TV.
What is that? Who's running that? People you know run
that's
that studio?
That's Jeff Schneider.
Okay. All right. And
very talented guy.
Well, we'll talk more about what you guys are going to do with the music in a little while, but let's play this one here. It is called Road to Heaven. All right. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, and Matt Presti and Jeff Schneider.
And Mike Coulter.
And Mike Coulter. And they don't have a name for the band yet, so if you want to help him out.
I can help with that.
Oh, my God.
I have a whole notebook filled with these things.
All right. In the meantime, think about that and listen to this.
We had to learn to break away.
tonight. A song called Road to Heaven, Matt Presti, and a couple other guys from St. Louis, Missouri, writing that stuff. I got Matt actually in the studio with me here. Mike Coulter played drums on that, Jeff Schneider on guitar, and my friend, Matt Presti, playing bass and singing the song there. And let's see, I keep forgetting which mic you're on. Is that you?
One, two. Hey,
yeah, that's Matt. Okay, tell us a little about a little more about the new stuff that you're doing, Matt. This is obviously stuff that's you're just working on. The note that you sent me said you're working on an album maybe this summer, but I know this is all. I mean, you haven't even named the band. So
right, it's brand new stuff. So I mean, we met by chance, and the guitar player and I, Jeff and Mike, I used to jam with in a band back in 92 called Profound. Did a lot of Rush cover songs and, you know, real trippy stuff that the crowd, you know, kind of got off on in a different way than, you know, the upbeat dance kind of band that you're used to. But yeah, it's for St. Louis back at that time, it was a tough original scene, you know, but it was very dynamic, you know. But
yeah. Where are you from originally? I know you make your home down in Salem right now.
I was born in Richmond Heights, Missouri.
Where's that? That's the St. Louis area?
Yeah. It's right on the outskirts of St. Louis City limits and to the west near Highway 40, Big Bend area. And went to MRH High School and was told when I was 10th grade by my counselor, according to an aptitude test, that I would best serve society as a maintenance man for an apartment complex. And that's when I knew I wanted to do music.
Hey, those guys have a lot of fun, man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the maintenance guys.
I just rejected that.
The musicians do too, though, I hear. You guys all have a lot of fun. I think you can have fun doing anything. You just got to decide you're going to.
Right. It's got to be yours. You
know. No doubt. All right. Let's see. Let me say hello to people that are listening to us this evening on KOPN over the traditional airwaves or over the internet, live or otherwise. If you listen from the archives, every Monday we do this. We broadcast a show from the wonderful studios here at KOPN in lovely downtown Columbia, Missouri. And we stream the show live as well on the web at kopn.org. Just click on the Listen Live button. You get a lovely 64K stream. And you can listen to us through either one of those mediums. All right. Now, Cosmic Waves Radio, I need to talk about something really quickly. They've been wonderful people and have provided a stream on Monday nights for over a year. They're having, I don't know if a shakeup or I'm just not sure what's going on, but they haven't had the stream available for the last few weeks, and I know some people have been asking about it. I sent an email to a couple of the guys that are involved there, and so far, all I know is that you know, this—it's not something that's being fixed. trying to find a nice way to say it. Right now, it looks like the Cosmic Wave stream is going to be down, at least until those guys decide to do something different. So, if you're listening on the web, the KOPN stream is the one you're going to have to use. I hope that they get things back together there at Cosmic Waves. If not, they've been a great resource, and I really appreciate everything that they've done for us over the last year. And my best to Paul and Carrie and everybody else over there. Okay, let's see. As things change, I should mention Larry, the web wizard. I haven't mentioned Larry in a few weeks because he's been going through a whole bunch of stuff, I should say. But anyway, he's back with us, and thank God, because I need Larry's help more than I can tell you. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to start to move the website in a more forward direction. I love the site and everything, but it hasn't really changed a lot on the front side there for quite some time, and I want to add some updated news and some other things that I think are worth putting front and center on the website for some time. So anyway, Larry and I are getting back together and doing some of this stuff on the web. So thanks to Larry for all the stuff that he does and has done. And thanks to everybody else who's out there sending music and art and poetry and all this stuff. Matt's a perfect example here. When did you and I first connect? A year ago or so, maybe even longer.
A couple years, I think, maybe even.
Yeah, a year and a half at least, and I'm not sure exactly how, but somehow Matt got me some of his music. And
it was a good friend in St. Louis by the name of Steve Lukowski. He goes by Crux in the chat room, and he called me out of the blue, and we've been trading knowledge and bits back and forth for about 5 years now.
So he was a listener to the show, and then got a hold of you.
He said, all this guy's taking original music submissions. You got to send your stuff.
Yeah, and this is a good time to say that again. You know, if you listen to the program, you know it, but I only play independent, original music. And if you're out there making that sort of stuff, I'm really into sharing it with people and helping you share it. I'm not into, you know, the whole proprietary business of, you know, keeping everything sort of private, I guess, to me, I don't know. I mean, I recognize there's a place for intellectual property, and I recognize people's rights to their own music and all this stuff, of course. But I'm just into sharing it.
Absolutely.
So I'm into other people that are into sharing it too. And if you're one of those and you think you have stuff that other people would be, enjoy hearing, send it. And I'd be glad to listen to it and check it out. And if it works and we like it and everything, I'll play it on the program.
Right.
That's exactly what happened with Matt. Now we're friends, and I feel fortunate to have come across him one way or the other. I mean, get to hear his music and talk story with him and all that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Don't sweat the small stuff.
That's the truth. There's a name for a band, or an album at least.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you would like to, go to the website, mikehagan.com. You'll have access to everything that we're doing there. Take a look and see. Share your thoughts with me. And you can zip on over to the forum. There's lots of interesting topics being discussed over there by interesting people. And not always, highbrow, not always lowbrow. Sometimes in the middle, sometimes comic relief. You never know what you're going to get. But there's lots of interesting people that are sort of posting fun and interesting stuff. Matt's
Absolutely. Sort
of been poking around over there
it's
lately.
It's getting addictive. It's like iPod, I have to have.
Yeah, it is. I go checking in the forum all the time. It's also a great place for breaking news because, you know, there are 50 or 60 members over there that are located in lots of different places all around this planet, and there are 50 or 60 people who are paying attention. And so when things happen, things that we might consider important, trust me, one of those 50 or 60 picks it up and they post it on the forum. So it's a real good place to look for important stuff, and it's also a great filter to go for, to look for the stuff, in other words, the stuff that's not important
right.
is the stuff you're going to find everywhere else.
In an excellent exchange of ideas.
Yeah, you're going to find
different points of view.
You'll find a lot of stuff that you're not finding in other places probably, and if you're looking for, you know, stuff that you're going to find in the newspaper or on CNN or Fox or whatever, that's stuff that you're probably not going to find there.
Right.
So don't be looking for that. Look for something different and come on over there and check it out. But there's lots of interesting people, and they post more than I can keep up with. But I do my best to, you know, put my own two cents in when I think it's worthy. And I'd also like to thank Chaos for getting the whole chat thing together. I was having some difficult time getting a good chat module together for the website, and this young man who goes by the name of Chaos got the chat together for us. You can link over there directly from the front page of the website, and it's great. We have a great chat thing that's happening right now live. We'll peek in there for questions and comments as we move through the program tonight. I'd like to say hello to everyone there, and thanks for joining us in the chat. It's always fun to watch what's happening there. Sometimes I get lost in it. I go into the chat room as I'm trying to do the show, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I start reading, and I forget that I'm supposed to be freaking talking, you know. And it's like, oh, well, and I want to start to, like, read the things that are happening on the chat, because it is, there's sort of a whole side story that goes on, you know, behind every show. And I should mention this while I'm talking about the chat. I would love it if somebody out there who's listening to the chat would copy the whole thing at the end of the show, for, you know, so we have the entire chat from start to finish of the radio program, and then I'll create a special section in the forum for the chats, and because a lot of times people post stuff during the program that's relevant. There might be a link to a story or a website that people might want to reference later.
And there's questions.
And there's questions,
else.
And there might be things that are going on that are outside of the show that get lost. So I'd like to capture all that stuff and put it in the archives there on the forum. So if somebody out there, you know, that's participating in the chat room might just, at the end of the show, just cut and paste the whole thing onto a Microsoft Word document or something like that. I don't know if I don't know enough about it to know if you can get the whole thing. But anyways, if somebody can figure that out, that'd be really cool.
Right on.
And it's at least something that I'd like to try to do in the future. So maybe that's a hint to Chaos out there if you want to. You know, now you got trouble. You helped me out, you know. And now I'm going to ask you for something else. You know. So anyway, it's great the way it is, and I appreciate the chat and the people that are participating over there, okay? All right. Tonight we've got Kent Stedman. And it's going to be a blast. We'll get to Kent in just about 15 or 20 minutes here. I'll get him on the phone. Before I do that, let me give you the email address, orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio@AOL.com. Send me email. send the guests that we have on the program emails, send our musicians email. We all like to hear from you, okay? The website, one last time, at least for a little while, MikeHagan, HAGAN.com. The phone number here, if we decide to take some phone calls, and we may, because we may have some people in the studio anyway and a lot of people participating tonight, is 573-443-8255. So if we open up the phone lines, that's the number that you'll call, all right? Let's see. One more time, 573-443-8255. Tonight, the Bard, Bard School, Kent Stedman from CyberspaceOrbit.com. Get a leg up. Get on the web. Go to his website. You can link there directly from my site, or just type in CyberspaceOrbit.com. He is a true wizard, and there's more to be found in the bowels of cyberspace orbit than I can imagine, wading through for the rest of my life. And lucky for me, I've sort of been hanging out with him for the last 10 years and watching the whole thing develop. And I was astonished the day I met him, and I've continued to be astonished and blessed and privileged to call him my friend and my mentor and who knows what else, but he's a wonderful, wonderful guy. We'll have him with us in just a little while here. Kent Stedman from CyberspaceOrbit.com. Next week, on the 16th of July, John Perkins was supposed to be on the show. You know, the guy that wrote Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And he has a new book, but he has something came up. I talked to his publicist today, and something came up, and he can't do the show. He has something going on that night. And so we're going to reschedule John Perkins. I'm not sure exactly when. It'll probably be later in the – it might even be into fall. He's very busy, and he only wants to do the show when he's on the West Coast, understandably. So we'll just figure out a time when that works sometime later in the year. In the meantime, I got a great, interesting email from Bruce Raphael, who's in China, if you remember. And Bruce is in the middle of all kinds of strangeness there. And I want to be able to clarify some of the stuff we talked about in the previous program with Bruce Raphael, and we'll get an update on the further strangeness of his research into archaeology and astronomy and paleontology from China with Bruce Raphael in a week, okay? The 23rd, I'm not sure what will drop in there. The 30th, Dr. John Sheliak will be back on the program. Really excited to have John back with us. And we'll talk about lots of different things with him, as he's capable of, and new info on the time wave and some of the work that he's interested in that relates to Terrence's ideas. So we'll talk with John about that and lots of other stuff, I'm sure, on the 30th of July, okay? All these guys, you can find information about them on the web. Just go to my site and go to the archives. Kent, of course, has been on the program a number of times. You can hear those programs, download them. They're all interesting for sure, at least, you know, in my opinion. And we've had one program in the past with Dr. John Sheliak, and that was just a couple of months ago, and that's one that I think is very, very worth hearing. And you can download those from the archives as well as link over to the websites for both of those guys, okay? Okay, Patrick Flanagan, doing interesting work in the fields of alternative energy sometime later this summer. Dr. Richard Tarnas, still working things out with Dr. Tarnas, but he's a busy person and someone who I'd like to have on the program because he's written a couple of amazing books. Passion of the Western Mind was, I think, just a remarkable book that, I don't know, came out maybe 10 years ago or so, maybe not quite that many. But at any rate, Dr. Richard Tarnas, who recently has authored a book called Cosmos and Psyche, Intimations of a New World, and he's very forward-thinking guy, and we'll try to get him on the program sometime in the next couple months, all right? John Major Jenkins, of course, sometime, I don't know, soon, maybe on the Equinox. We'll do a special solstice or equinox show with John. Jeff Stray, going to have Jeff back on the show, and lots of other people in the wing. So that's all coming up in the next couple of months and through the summertime here on Radio Orbit. You can check it all out on the web, and download the old programs and listen to the new ones, okay? All right, let's see. Before we go to a break, I think that I'll talk about a couple of wonderful people that deserve to be noted tonight. And we'll start with Buckminster Fuller, our Buckminster Fuller. Interestingly, he was born on July 12th, in 1895 and died on July 1st, 1893. And I guess, what, 98 years old. But Bucky Fuller, one of these remarkable individuals in the not-too-distant past, and somebody who is worthy of note if you're interested in, you know, sustainable futures, interesting architecture and engineering, and just a visionary mind, and somebody who was able to express himself really clearly about what he saw happening on this planet and what he thought, may be coming. Anyway, Bucky Fuller, here's to him. Died on July 1st, 1983, and was born on the 12th of July, 1895. Speaking of cool people that are having anniversaries, the passing of Jim Morrison was the 3rd of July. I meant to mention it last week, but I had Richard on right at the beginning of the program, and I didn't get to talk about it. But Jim Morrison, one of my favorite rock and rollers, of course, the singer and the force behind the Doors in the 60s and the 70s. But, I mean, he was more than just a singer for a band. He was something else, that guy. And he was a real, real true spirit, I think, even though he went and finished himself off in sort of a undignified way, perhaps. But Jim Morrison, amazing music, amazing intellect, and an amazing adventurer, and a pioneer of a whole lot of different things. So here's to you, Jim Morrison, passed on July 3rd, 1971. A couple more here for you. Nikola Tesla, our brother, our grandfather, July 10th, 1856, his birthday. Bardo, I know you're listening, okay? The Midnight Hour, you're going to come on the air, and we're going to celebrate the birthday of our brother Nikola Tesla, one of the most amazing men to roll around in the last 150 years or so, and someone who is will be remembered, I'm sure, with great respect and great admiration, even though that may not be the case quite yet, but his name is one that's going to be coming around.
The grandfather of electricity.
Damn straight, and a whole lot of other amazing things. So, Nikola, here's to you, my friend. And last but not least, Henry David Thoreau, his birthday, July 12th, 1817. Another one of these visionary people whose writings are worthy of your investigation and perusal, if nothing else. And in fact, I think what we'll do here is play a pretty song and read some pretty words from Henry David Thoreau over the top of this song, and then we will come back and talk a little bit more. We'll do space weather, got a few things in the news. I'll get Kent on the line, and we'll come back and continue things, okay? All right, in the meantime, Matt Presti. Still with me here, Matt?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, sir. And I'm going to play this song that's called 440. Why is it called 440?
Well, I have a buddy in the business, in the audio business, named Paul Ullman, that turned me on to the 440 resonant frequency. And, I knew very little about, like, pitchforks and different tones and whatnot. But a lot of the guys like Steve and everybody, or Steve and Paul, were, in this discussion about tone. And I asked what is 440? What is the deal? And he said, well, it's the A below middle C. And he said it's one of the, like, underlying resonating frequencies.
Or on a guitar or whatever.
Right.
Right.
Very prominent in the universe. Kind of like the number three, only in a sound way,
Wow, we'll have to, I hope Kent's listening.
That's why it's the A key on the, it's the first.
Right.
Whatever that means, too, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was done by convention, of course, but
sure.
But yeah, there's something to it. Well, when we get Kent on the air, we'll talk. He's very interested in all of this musical sound business.
Oh yeah,
and he's an interesting person because he's a talented musician, but he's also an esoteric and a mystic of sorts, and he understands that there are underlying qualities of sound that might not be, perceived on the surface, and might not be recognized by a lot of people that are just out there listening to things at one level,
Isn't it the tone, some sacred tone that the Buddhists chant, low chant, to try to mimic that?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many things about sound you and I were talking about it earlier tonight. You know, anytime you speak, anytime you sing, anytime, you know, even breathing and moaning, breathing and moaning and this sort of thing, they all create a different resonant frequency or whatever. They all a different sort of vibration. And so, I don't know, I mean, it seems only natural that those different vibrations would attract or repel different other things and work within the environment that they're being created within.
Right.
And who knows what happens. I mean, when you know, magicians have always said that if you know the right words, you can create magic.
Right.
You know? And so words are nothing more but a collection of sounds, you know, and music, in a similar sense, I think, can probably do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But I know that sound in general is a big player in our reality, whether we realize it or not. You know, I even think about the way that the books are written, the famous three of Western religion, all of them, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, all three of them begin exactly the same way, with the same phrase. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. Again, this is something about sound.
And if you think of each person in the world having their own tone of voice, and then, like, Velikovsky, Worlds in the Collision, he talked about the ancients documenting the sound that Mars made.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a bell in the sky,
sure.
Like the angel's trumpet.
It's a frequency, yeah.
So everything has its own sound wave.
That's interesting that you say that. There's a guy who's been on the program a couple times named Rick Levine, and he does he writes about what he calls quantum astrology. And essentially what he does, his view of the whole business is that the planets and moons and asteroids and comets and celestial bodies in general essentially act the same way subatomic particles do.
Right, micro.
And they, like a subatomic particle, an electron or anything like that, they all have a particular frequency that they resonate. In chemistry and in, you know, biology to a certain extent, they talk about the ESR, the electron spin resonance of a particular molecule, the ESR or of an atom, of a particular atom, the ESR. And the ESR of carbon is different than the ESR of this or that or the other thing, right? And it actually has a tone.
Right.
And the idea would be that, yeah, the planets do the same thing. They actually have a tone because they act the same way as these other particles do. They're just on the macro side of things.
Right.
And they also act as particles and waves at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the things that's really interesting. You don't think about planets like that, but what Levine says is, well, a planet's a wave until you look at it, just like an electron is.
Right.
That's sort of a trip, actually. So, anyway, regardless, we're going to play a song here called 440 that just sort of got us off on this whole little tangent. But here's to the tone of 440. And it's Mike Hagan. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia 89.5 FM. We'll come back with Kent Stedman in about 15 minutes. And in the meantime, this one is from Matt Presti with words from Henry David Thoreau. It's Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit, back in just a few minutes. Books I'd fain cast off, I cannot read. Twixt every page my thoughts go stray at large. Down in the meadow, where is richer feed, and will not mind to hit their proper targ. Plutarch was good, and so was Homer too. Our Shakespeare's life, we're rich to live again. What Plutarch read, that was not good nor true, nor Shakespeare's books, unless his books were men. Here while I lie beneath this walnut bough, what care I for Greeks or the Troy town? If just your battles are enacted now between the ants upon the hummock's crown, bid Homer wait till I issue the learn. If red or black the gods will favor most, or yonder Ajax with the phalanx turn, struggling to heave some rock against the host. Tell Shakespeare to attend some leisure hour, for now I've business with this drop of dew, and see you not the clouds prepare a shower. I'll meet him shortly when the sky is blue. This bed's heard grass and wild oats was spread last year with nicer skill than monarchs use. A clover tuft is pillow for my head, and violets quite overtop my shoes. And now the cordial clouds have shut all in, and gently swells the wind to say all's well. The scattered drops are falling fast and thin, some in the pool, some in the flower bell. I'm well drenched upon my bed of oats, but see that globe come rolling down its stem. Now like a lonely planet there it floats, and now it sinks into my garment's hem. Drip, drip the trees, for all the country round, and richness rare distills from every bough. The wind alone, it makes every sound, shaking down crystals on the leaves below. For shame, the sun will never show himself. Who could not, if his beams e'er melt me so? My dripping locks, they would become an elf, who in beaded coat does gaily go. KOPN Columbia 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. That was a song called 440 by Matt Presti, and a poem called The Summer Rain from Henry David Thoreau that I read over the front part of that music, and I appreciate Matt letting me do that and not ruining his song, hopefully. So, wait, there's your mic. There's you, Matt. There we go.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. When did you write that? When have you been writing some of this stuff?
It was 2006, right. April sometime.
Okay.
Kind of go through a creative spurt of
That song has a great feel to it. Just a real...
That was all first take stuff, actually.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just junk takes that I decided to keep. And
Hey, you know, no such thing as junk takes. It's like junk DNA.
Well, right. Hopefully it's the upgrade. It can be upgraded, put it that way.
Right. No, it's great. Anyway. All right, well, good stuff. And, again, on the web, I haven't mentioned it, but if you want to find information about Matt, you can certainly go to his MySpace page, and it's myspace.com/Matt, MattPresti, Matt Presti. And there are a number of his songs available there you can listen to and other stuff that he's interested in, probably information about other bands and projects that he's involved in and all that stuff. All right, Matt, let's do space weather here.
My favorite part.
Yeah, this is cool. I'll do sort of an abbreviated one because me and Kent will probably talk about some more stuff that's happening up there.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But I do want to make it sort of an announcement that people actually will at least pay a little bit of attention to. I got an email from Dr. Paul LaViolette, who's another one of these remarkable individuals doing his best to, you know, push the envelope of understanding about what's happening on this planet and at least in the little section of the galaxy that we're familiar with. Anyway, I got an email from Paul, and he has some interesting new information added to his website with regard to evidence against the idea of an expanding universe. And this is just a hypothesis, the idea of the expanding universe, you know. Nobody's proved anything about anything. Nobody knows what's going on. I always like to remind people of that. And Paul's someone who makes that clear, and in his wording, he says, Mike, check out the new webpage added to the Sphinx Stargate website, which calls attention to evidence against the expanding universe hypothesis, and then gives the website for it, which I will cut and paste here into the chat room right now. And then I'll put this up on the forum a little bit later. And we'll put a link to it up on the main site. But at any rate, Paul took enough time to send an email and thought it was important enough to do. He doesn't do that very often. And anyway, he thought it was important, sent the email out to me, and I'm sure a number of other people. And I want to make sure that you out there are aware of it and that you go check it out, because it is, you know, the way we view the world and the universe and our place in it, obviously, you know, profoundly affects the way we think about ourselves and our own past and present and future. And that's why I think it's important, you know, to look into some of these things that may go against orthodox and conventional thinking. But anyway, Paul LaViolette, you know, he's got the full pedigree. So, you know, he's a genius astrophysicist who knows as much about systems theory as anybody that I've ever run across. So, anyway, Paul, I love you. You're doing great work, and thank you for sharing that with us, okay? Okay, and I'll try to get Paul back on the show, but, man, I tell you what, that's like pulling teeth. He'd rather just send the emails once in a while and tell people to go read his stuff. And, you know, that's all well and good. He's living in Greece these days. He had to get the hell out of here. He said the empire was just getting him down.
I know the feeling.
So, anyway, Paul LaViolette on the web at etheric, etheric.com. Dr. Paul LaViolette, as it were. All right. The Mars Phoenix lander is going to be launched here sometime soon. Earth and Mars will be converging for a reasonably close encounter in December of this year, and NASA is going to try to take advantage of that by launching a new mission that is called the Phoenix Mars Lander. And we'll talk with Kent about Mars. There's a lot of interesting imagery and stories coming back from the landers that are still up there roaming around and taking pictures and doing all kinds of stuff on Mars right now as we speak, and Kent stays up on all that stuff, and we'll talk with him about that in a little while. But at any rate, a new mission, the Phoenix Mars Lander, will supposedly touch down in an Arctic region on the planet Mars, where it can get samples from the ground and look at layers of soil and ice and whatever else might be there in the Arctic region of the planet Mars. I don't know if they mean in the South Pole or the North Pole. I guess Arctic, if you go by Earth standards, it would mean in the North Pole of the planet, but I don't know. We'll have to see what they come up with. But they're looking for organic molecules, they say. Now, if NASA finds organic molecules on Mars, the first thing they'll do is probably destroy them and hide the story. So, you know, I mean, that's no news, I don't think. I think they found organic molecules probably in 1976 with the Viking 2 mission. That's my own guess, at least, but Who knows what? I mean, we know there's running water on the surface of the planet now.
Seen pictures.
Running water, liquid water on the surface of Mars. You don't believe it? Google.
The ESA portal has a ton of good
photos. Oh, yeah, I mean, you can see this stuff. Kent, you know, we're going to have Kent on in 7-8 minutes or so, but you won't believe what he did a few years ago. You know, the guy's a genius. He found the Mariner archives. Now, Mariner was a Mars mission that was before Viking. This was the first, maybe not the first, but, well, he'll clarify, but I think that the Mariner missions were the first orbiters that actually orbited the planet Mars, mm-hmm. and took photos. There was Mariner 1 and Mariner 2. But anyway, this was before the real hardcore clampdown on information at NASA, at least is my opinion. And Kent somehow got a hold of all of the raw data of the photos that were taken on Mariner 1 and Mariner 2, I think. And again, he'll clarify this. For the most part, I'm speaking the truth, though. The raw footage. And so if you and me looked at this stuff, you could open it on your computer, but it wouldn't look like anything. It has to be expanded, and you have to do a bunch of fancy photo stuff that you have to know how to do.
A lot of, you know, big TIFF files.
And I mean, you have to know how to handle them in order to be able to see what's really there. The data is there. Everything is there for the right person to see it. You just have to know how to do it. Well, so, you know, the smart guys at NASA, they made all this stuff available, whether they meant to or not. Maybe they just didn't think anyone would ever be smart enough to decode it or whatever. But anyway, Kent took all of that stuff. There are megabytes of this imagery from the Mariner mission 40 years ago.
Right.
That showed imagery that was at least as stunning as some of the stuff that's coming back today. That's why the stuff that comes back today, I'm certain that it's filtered, because I know that the technology has advanced a great degree in 40 years. And if the photos that they're taking today are no better than the ones that we saw 40 years ago that Kent has so kindly deciphered and put up on his website, you got to go digging for them. It's a few years back, but everything's there in his archives. You can see these Mariner photos. Just start digging through those. There's thousands of them, and your mind will be quickly blown. And I mean, I was just stunned by the stuff I saw. Waterfalls, all kinds of shit.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, remarkable stuff that's happening up on that planet. And I don't know if the missions that we send up there are just for show and it's just all a bunch of theater, but there's real things that are happening up there, and probably not only on Mars, probably on the moon, probably who knows what. You know, Jay Widener was on the program. We got to get Jay back one of these days. But, you know, talking about all this people in the 60s and 70s, everyone was talking about all the strange things that they found on the moon that nobody could understand, you know. Structures and towers and all kinds of weirdness that you know, just got somehow conveniently tucked away into the annals of, you know, the memory hole.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows how much of it is misinformation, disinformation, you know, legitimate information. Very difficult to tell, because it just gets clouded by the mist of history, and, you know, it's very difficult, unless you've sort of seen it with your own eyes, to know what's really going on, because who knows what somebody just told somebody, even if, you know, it's just very difficult to know. So, anyway, a new mission to Mars, the Phoenix Mars Lander, we'll see what they can come up with. That's going to be launched sometime after August 3rd. That's when the window opens up, and we'll see what happens. Sunspot 963, there's an interesting pattern of a number of sunspots that showed up over the weekend, and it's a big, beautiful one, and lots of potential for solar flares, big ones perhaps, that could be connected to this particular sunspot area, number 963, it's been designated. There's a couple of dark cores to the sunspot with a whole bunch of funky magnetic twister fields that are, you know, winding their way back and forth between these two spots, and that's usually when you see some of the significant flare activity, when you get this real dynamic magnetic fields that are occurring above and around these sunspots. It's been sort of entertaining so far, the eruptions that have come from there, but nothing really significant yet. But boy, this thing is just getting wound up, perhaps. So, anyway, that's sort of what's happening in the skies above our heads. We could talk more about the stars and the moons and the flying critters out there in the cosmos, and we'll do that, I'm sure, with Kent Stedman in just a few minutes. In the meantime, we will play another song from my friend Matt Presti and take a little break here, and then we'll come back with Kent in just a few minutes here. Let's see. I was going to do some news, but we can catch up on the news with Kent, anything that's worthy of our attention. I'm sure we can catch up to that stuff with Kent. And in the meantime, I should pick a song here. This one is called In Your Face. I love this song. And I heard it for the first time this afternoon. I didn't know what the name it was. I called it Alchemical State, because I just heard one of the lyrics. And anytime there's an alchemical discussion happening in a musical song or a regular conversation, usually perks my ear. But at any rate, this one is a cool song. It's Matt Presti. And Matt, why don't you tell us a little bit about this one? Is it an older one or one you've written recently?
It's a 2006 song. It's okay. Kind of a outlet tune. Talks a lot about, I guess, directed toward somebody whose, you know, mind isn't really open to much. The authoritarian kind of people out there. But
All right. Well, let's hear it, okay?
All right.
We'll do it, everybody. This is Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. I got Matt Presti in the studio with me here, listening to his tunes all night. We got Kent Stedman on the line. Have him in just a couple minutes, so stick around. It's going to be a fun night. In the meantime, this is In Your Face. Back in just a few minutes. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.
Of keeping close to fact and avoiding distortion or misrepresentation. What is your truth? Why did you come to this world?
All right, everybody, that's a song called In Your Face. It's Mike Hagen. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, Mid-Missouri source for in-depth news, diverse talk, music of the world, more than radio, your community radio, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Just a couple of ticks past the midnight hour, now on the 10th of July, 2007. My guests for the next couple hours will be the wonderful, the amazing, the remarkable, Kent Stedman, the Bard from CyberspaceOrbit.com. If you're not familiar with Kent, you should get familiar with him. He's been on the program a number of times, so he's no stranger to most of the listeners of the program. It's always a pleasure to have him with us. His website is amazing. You can go there and take a look around as we're talking. But let's just get right to it and say hello to my good friend, Bardo. Hi.
Howdy, howdy.
How are you?
Really nice music, Matt. Where's Matt? Is he there?
He's here. I'll turn his mic back on.
Thanks, Kent. Appreciate that.
No doubt. All right. Yeah, I got turned on to Matt's stuff a year and a half ago. You actually met him, Kent, a couple weeks ago when you were here in town. This was
Matt and Lori been on my mind.
Ditto.
To talk about music and sound.
Absolutely.
It all gets down to sound.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about that, but first let's take care of the particulars. Kent Stedman, www.cyberspaceorbit.com. You can link there directly from my site. Kent, for the new folks, a little bit about yourself. You don't have to go into too much detail. Most people know you, but just a quick bit on who you are and what you're interested in.
I'm an old fart.
Or tonight, at least.
I'm an old codger. Coot. Mm. I'm retired. Low on money. High on wife. Wendy's over causing a bunch of trouble over at Shannon's right now.
Oh, she's good at
that. Y'all got to meet Wendy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's enlightened. I'm not.
Yeah, well, you're there on the phone with me, and she's over there messing with Shannon, so you're doing that.
Yeah, she bought us a new widescreen TV, so Shannon had to go buy one, too.
Oh, God. Keeping up with Mom and Dad.
The baby's been here all day, so I'm pretty much into pure endemic language, otherwise known as baby talk.
Yeah, learning how to be short and to the point.
They're so musical. Talk about poetic and musical. It's this little two-year-old. You can tell what he's talking about. He hasn't got all his words put together straight yet, but he's getting to it. But you can tell what he's thinking and what he wants and what he's saying by the musical quality of his voice. Sometimes it's really sweet and lyrical, sometimes not.
Right. You know, they say that every child, every child, of course, is probably an overstatement, but most children, unless there's something, you know, significantly wrong with their vocal cord structure and larynx and all this physiological business, they say that most children, and I mean most, by 90%+, by the age of 4 years old, have perfect pitch. But they lose it. Most people lose it sometime between the ages of 4 and 7. Joseph Chilton Pierce did a whole bunch of research on this. It's really interesting. And he tends to think that it's a cultural problem, that because music and the arts and these tonal things aren't encouraged and established when the window is open, when the mind is building that particular type of relationship. You know, the mind has different, and the brain has different windows of development. You know, you get the big burst at 18 months, then you get another one at 4 years old, then you get another one at 7 years old. I mean, these are physiological things that happen, just like your 4 year molars or whatever. I mean, these things happen. So anyway, Pierce thought, Kent, that it was very possible that all children are born essentially musical. And at a very young age, 4 or 5 years old, are actually capable of singing and carrying perfect tones and pitch. But then, you know, it's sort of like use it or lose it. And if you don't do it, then, you know, it somehow becomes lost.
Well, that's what they do right out of the old hats, man. They sing. And, the arts, you asked me what I did once. I was a art instructor, taught the visual arts. 23 years in Central California at Fresno City College. But the same thing goes for the visual arts. You know, that's a birthright too, just like singing.
Well, I was going to ask you, maybe you could talk a little bit about the similarities and differences between art as a visual medium and as an audio one. I mean, do they convey the same message? Is that the purpose?
Well, we try to... tried to put them together, you know. And we did a lot of experimentation trying to, put poetry and art and music together. Mm-hmm. That's what, back in the 60s, they were called light shows, man. So
And I guess Matt could probably add to this, but I guess these days, I mean, people are doing it through music combined with video and lighting effects and all kinds of different stuff.
Jeff's actually writing a light show for this project. Gobo's in the works.
It's built around the music. In other words, you convey a particular message during a particular part of the song or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
fire particular patterns.
What do you make of that,
Bud? My students were 60s rock and roll bands, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, they got me involved in all that and doing light shows and working with visual effects during their concerts. So I got to do some of that. It was pretty cool. But what I was saying to start off with about this birthright thing, that my biggest job teaching was to take it all loose again, because A, little children all do art. I used to bring Leah in when she was, that's my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I used to bring her into my huge lecture class. I had like 200 people in it from all different age groups, walks of life, and so on. And just for the heck of it, the first day of the semester, I'd say, okay, take out a piece of paper, do some art. That's all I'd say. Then I'd go sit down somewhere. And they'd freak out, you know. And so I'd try to, in an elementary way, get them back doing stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
starting by stating what I feel to be true, that there are really no rules at all when it comes to the visual arts. There are no rules. As soon as you cook up some sort of a definition of what art is, somebody will come along and blow it to smithereens.
That's right.
And then the next thing I do is bring in children and hand them chalk. And there were three big chalkboards across the front of the lecture hall, and I'd say, go. And man, the rest of the chalk dust would be flying, and as far as they could reach all the way around in about 5 minutes, they covered all three blackboards. Leah could do that herself.
Right.
And then I'd look at my students, you know, who had the fact that they were once artists and now freaked out in the face of doing art, you know, to shock them into realizing that it's a human birthright, because here are right. all these kids doing art. You know.
It's amazing, because it is, it can be reestablished too, though.
And as somebody
right, because that was your goal, was to get these guys to get it reinvigorated and say, hey, I can still do this or whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of like you have to fire up the imagination again. That's the basic root problem, is opening up the door to the imagination. Once you do that, then it's all kinds of chaos breaks loose. A lot of art gets done. A lot of classroom discipline is totally destroyed forever. And so I turn an art appreciation class, I turn it totally away from any sort of historical approach and say, okay, you know what we're going to do for the next 2.5 months? We're going to do art, and we'd do art. Even with 200, I mean, think what you can do with like a couple hundred people in your class.
Yeah, with any sort of organization, and with anyone who has a good idea, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say, okay, everybody bring a 2x4. and so here comes 200 8-foot-long 2x4s with a hole drilled in either end and some twine. And I'd say, we'd all walk out in the middle of the campus and, on the lawn, and I'd say, okay, build some.
You know, that's crazy, because I mentioned, I don't know if you were listening, or if you're on the phone yet, I can't remember, but Bucky Fuller, his birthday was in 1895 on July 12th, and you remind me of something that he would do. Tell me a Bucky Fuller story. Is that what you were building, geodesic domes with your 2x4s?
Well, no. It'd usually amount to a bunch of people staring at each other, blinking, going, what the hell, you know? And then in one case, I remember distinctly what happened. This middle-aged guy from Vietnam came up and said, I used to be a... He says, when I was in Nam, I was a structural engineer. And he says, let me take over. And I'd say, okay, take over. So this guy organized the whole thing, and by the time it was through, there was just this immense structure. It wasn't geodesic. It was pretty random. They're beautiful. You know, more organic, I'd say.
So it didn't have a function.
Like if somebody dumped a box of toothpicks out in front of your kids and said, glue them all together.
And it was in its final form, it was meant as an art piece, not to have any particular function.
Yeah, it'd get me in all kinds of trouble.
Right in the middle of campus?
Now, get that damn thing off our lawn.
It's going to fall on somebody.
I say, you get it off the lawn. I can't get it off the lawn. It's huge.
Yeah, it was easy. It was easier when it wasn't all bound together, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
man.
The campus cops would come and rope it all in, and they're afraid of somebody dying in the middle of that massive structure. They're lighting it on fire or something. So they'd rope it all off and put yellow flag.
Can't
along the edge, and it sat out there for a few weeks. But we did other things. I'd say bring some plastic drop cloth, you know, painter's type drop cloth.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go out on the gymnasium floor and heat seal it all together in these big bags. And then we'd fill them full of helium and cut them loose. And the next thing I'd know, I'd be in the dean's office saying, we got a call from the Federal Aeronautics Commission about unidentified objects floating over Fresno. But they were these bags of painter's drop cloth. Like, you take 50 bags and heat seal them all together and pump them full of helium. That's
all right. Imagination, right? You said earlier that... this was the key, and that people get cut off from their imagination. How and why do people get cut off from their imagination?
I don't know. Never happened to me. Got worse.
Like some sort of a medical condition.
That's now, it's just that's cultural a good one to conditioning, have. You know, and working 9 to 5 and things like that.
Yeah, there's a pill
what
for that.
What do you expect?
And
our sort of Western way of piecing things together.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the sort of rational screen has to be superimposed on top of everything. Mm-hmm. You know, which in my mind is a kind of weird theocracy, I think. It's the religion of pattern thought. And it's ingrained deeply in our culture. Yeah, think this way. It usually happens about 6 years old when you start going to kindergarten. You have to think in certain ways.
Is it possible to think in more than one different way? In other words, to be able to move back and forth between?
Well, see, you're not supposed to go up to a stucco wall and see things. That kind of thing. That's taboo.
Mm.
You're not supposed to look at clouds and see things in it, like children do.
Right.
In fact, the word imagination has become a put-down. You know, it's just your imagination. The word fantasy becomes a put-down. No, it's just fantasy. So you have to crank that back up. And I had exercises to help them do that. You know. That was my big challenge. First day I'd come out and say, okay, draw a circle now, take out your pencil and fill it full of dots. You know, and...
you did that to me.
Yeah.
And it was actually profound when I did it. For 10 minutes, you guys... I drew a circle, right, Kent? A maybe 4 or 5 inch circle diameter,
mm-hmm.
and took a pencil, lead pencil, number 2 pencil, whatever, pencil though, and then just started tapping inside the circle, tap 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 tap, for 10 minutes. You can tap a lot in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe longer, but I tapped and tapped and tapped tap 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 tap. What's the purpose?
And then I'd say, well, connect the dots.
Find an image inside all the tapping. Right.
Yeah, and if they if they couldn't find like a relatively recognizable image, you know, and so the kind of image you might see looking at clouds, where you see an elephant in the clouds,
mm-hmm.
like that. If they couldn't see that. I'd say it doesn't matter. It would just connect them.
Well, when I did it, I had the perfect impression of a raven.
Yeah.
When I was done, and I just sort of softly outlined the shape of it once it came out at me. But that's certainly what it was, and I could never.
Well, that's generally.
And
what
I could never draw a raven. I'm not a drawer. I couldn't draw right now if I decided to, you know, to draw a picture of a raven. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it. It would look silly because I'm not a good, you know, I don't draw well. But when I with my tapping business, when I did this exercise, I did when I finally did outline what came out at me. It was a very. You know, it was authentic-looking crow or raven. It looked exactly, I mean, it was a good drawing, in other words. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do things like a circle, you know, has a certain dynamic to it, for instance, and mm-hmm. I could anticipate what some people were seeing and drawing. For instance, after it was all done, I'd say, okay, raise your hand if you drew a flower or a mandala-type object.
Mm-hmm.
And people would go, holy smokes, and they'd raise their hand, and there'd be 20 of them that found that. But that makes sense, you know. The circle, the center of the circle, and then drawing a line sort of radiating
mm-hmm.
out.
Mm-hmm.
The circle itself was a conjuring device that made for an awful lot of mandalas.
Yeah. Yeah, the circle is, I mean, as sacred a form as I think could exist in our history.
Center of the circle and then reaching out to the edge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have a lot of flowers, but then you'd see some really, I mean, there'd be certain people that would create freaking Rembrandt painting of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
They'd see a lot of stuff, they'd be able to perceive a lot of information.
Coming out essentially through what should be noise.
Yeah.
Now, is it?
I'd follow that up by bringing a TV in, and they had some sort of gizmo TV projection, one of the earlier devices where they had these three lenses that would project TV up on the screen, and I'd turn it between the channels, see,
mm-hmm.
to where you have the white noise. And it's really interesting because the human brain can see form in randomness,
mm-hmm.
random pattern, and it's sort of a little key to the doorway of imagination. And, you know, I'd suggest things. I'd say, look, there's a horizontal line, and I'd wave my pointer across it, and a horizontal line would become quite obvious. I'd say, now look at this vertical line, and it would become quite obvious. And then I'd move to things, well, watch this guy walking across the screen, you know. And I'd track my stick, you know, it looked like a pool cue, across the screen, and people would gasp because they'd see a guy, you know, with his legs walking across the screen. And so out of this chaos, things can be summoned. Then I'd have them look at it kind of like, remember those surds, they call them, in the, see them in the department stores that look like a bunch of noise.
That's when you got to sort of stare at, mm-hmm. but not really stare at or something?
Yeah, there is a dimension to even the random white noise on between channels on the TV screen, where if you can look deeper and deeper into it, it gets really trippy.
That's weird, actually, because, I mean, there are, you know, conspiracy theories about, you know, information being, you know, transmitted through all kinds of different means that are sort of in plain sight, but just the data not available, or, you know, the perception of the data not there.
Well, it isn't totally conspiracy type thing. I mean, they aren't programming your brain as much as the fact that you can program it yourself, you start looking at that, and then looking deeply, you can suggest to yourself that you want to see something.
Mm.
And by gum, you'll see it. Or, even more startling is when you just say to yourself, well, I'm not going to program anything. I just want to see without anticipating what ahead of time what I want to see. And this amazing stuff will happen. I've seen Viking ships sailing across the bounding main and things like this. But go outside and look at the stars, and why did somebody back in the good old days started calling Orion the Hunter and Cassiopeia the Swan?
Right. I mean, the constellations are essentially nothing more than connecting the dots again. I mean, and somebody just decided to connect those particular ones.
But the most trippy experience happened when, with some trained artists in one of my sculpture classes. I mean, these were, you teach community college and junior college, and you have people of all ages, you know, some with quite a bit of experience at times. And one of them was this Irish guy named Greg O'Halloran. I'm going to say his name because he was a profound influence in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding went to New York, made quite a name for himself. But he came to me one day and said, look, he said, I've been thinking about something, you know. He says, I've been thinking that even though we have this love for the material itself, which is true, you know, the love for the clay that you're sculpting or the love for the wood that you're carving.
Hmm.
He says, nevertheless, he says, I wish there were a more instantaneous method of communicating our visions, you know, without necessarily having to bother with the materials. And so we invented a series of what we called group expeditions. He did. He suggested it, actually. I went along with it. And we'd all sit down in the class, in the middle of the class, and close our eyes, and then one person would act like the Starship Enterprise Captain Admiral, you know, to launch an expedition somewhere in the imagination. We'd take turns. And then we'd go, we'd take a voyage into Middle Earth or into the stars or sometimes through time itself. And we had really profound experiences. And you have six or seven people doing that. You think, well, it's all going to get all tangled up. Egos are going to... Somebody's going to want to go one direction. Somebody's going to want to go another direction. But we had a kind of agreement going on and a kind of group dynamic going on where we launched some pretty interesting expeditions. And I mean, we went places that the next day we'd go back to and pick up where we left off because we wanted to see more of that particular place. You know? Now, during that time, Tolkien was a big influence in the 60s and 70s. So a lot of the places we went to were mythological, Middle-earth type of places. But then we began to explore more theoretical type places, like we'd explore time itself, you know, or pure space itself, or we'd go down into the microcosm and explore that. And the way it worked out is one guy'd start the image, the story is like a tale in a way, and then everybody to join in that direction. But amazingly, which I wouldn't have anticipated, we meshed together at a certain point to where one person was seeing ahead of time what the next person was about to describe, and so it became like a true expedition.
Wasn't there a type of an actual methodology that was designed after you guys were doing this stuff that was called Silver or Silva?
Yeah, interestingly, I think things happen simultaneously.
What was that? It was called the Silva method.
Yeah, but they called it Silva mind control.
Oh, all right. It was after a woman or something, right? Speaking of women, I got women walking in the door. My girlfriend Victoria just walked in the door here. Kent, can you believe it?
All right.
I know. Sit down, Victoria, if you like, and put on a set of headphones if you want.
Hi, Victoria.
She doesn't have a mic on right now, but she's got some headphones on.
Is Matt still there?
Matt's still here.
He's I'm here, Kent.
He's here. He's writing notes and doing some
stuff. Yeah, chime in when you feel like it.
Yeah, I know. I think he's got...
Well, we did
he's writing a book
sound.
Or something here as you're talking, I think. You think he's writing everything down you said or something?
Hey, Matt.
Yes.
Have you ever had a really threshold experience? I mean, a real threshold experience with a group of musicians where you... Well, let me just tell you what I'm talking about. There was once, and only once, I played a lot of music with a lot of groups, you know, but there was once that took place in a private house full of lawyers. And we were the band hired to play there. And there were two fiddlers and a banjo player and myself.
What were you playing? Dulcie?
I was playing guitar. Mm-hmm. And something happened in the middle of the night where it really got incredibly amazing in the fact that we were all playing way ahead of ourselves. It wasn't like we were playing anymore. It was like we were being played. Like the music was playing us. And it's hard to describe in words what went on, but I'm telling you, the next morning we were all on the phone talking to you, calling each other going, holy smokes, what happened?
Yes, actually I have had a couple of experiences like that where it's the man becomes the instrument, so to speak, as you know, almost like a reverse polarity kind of experience. But
is this similar, you guys think, to like, you know, what athletes call a peak experience or something? I remember Joe Campbell, Kent, used to tell the story about when he was, you know, he was a road racer, a runner, a cross-country runner, and he said, you know, there were a couple times in his career when he just knew that he was going to win that race, and he was 100 yards behind when he got the baton and the last leg of the relay, but he just knew it and had this experience, and nothing was going to stop him from winning that race, and he didn't even run it. Something else ran him, he used to talk about.
Right. I think someone dubbed it the zone, being
the zone.
In the zone.
Yeah, the groove. I know musicians
like
call
it. Like Tiger Woods and the focusing moment, or, you know, musicians.
So musicians, Kent, you call it the groove sometimes. So you're getting in the groove or something. Is that right?
I don't know. When I go back to Central California and I meet these guys, I say, do you remember that? You know, I have to do that a lot because I have memories of things that happened, not just that. And I have to go back and check with these guys to see if I haven't, like a typical old codger, invented a lot of stuff around it. And usually what happens is they're account is even more interesting than my own.
Turns out, yeah, it was more freakish than you actually remembered, yeah.
Yeah, I'm hard on myself in terms of some of my memories, you know. You got the right brain and the left brain, whatever you want to call it, the rational and the imaginative, and you have to kind of, you know, you're both. And sometimes after the fact, the rational will want to butt in, which is okay, and pattern it. Well, this is why this happened, or this is the explanation of what happened, you know. But when you go back to the actual thing, the actual experience as held in memory by other people, I guess it's even wilder because they will say things that you're afraid to say even to yourself.
Well, that's a good place to take a break, I think, because when we come back, you know, I've been telling some pretty weird stories on the air lately, so I'm going to show people that I'm not alone in telling weird stories.
Oh, good.
So we'll have you share. I want to start. We'll give a little teaser here, but we'll talk about the time travel, time tunnel story when we come back.
That's
all right?
An old codger.
That's
tale.
A great old coot story. I love it.
Yeah.
We'll start a campfire and we'll all gather around and we'll tell stories about time travel. Okay. All right, everybody. We'll do that with Kent Stedman. The man, the bard from cyberspaceorbit.com on the web, cyberspaceorbit.com. It's Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We've got another tune here from my friend Matt Presti, who's sitting here right with me in the studio here all the way from Salem, Missouri, up for the show tonight. Matt, thanks for sticking around.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And Victoria's over there listening quietly. She doesn't want a microphone, though, I don't think. Not yet. Maybe later in the show. She's got the gumption, but anyway, we'll see. In the meantime, speaking of imagination, this is a song that Matt wrote. I don't really know what the title of it is, but it has some words from another gentleman who was all about imagination. You'll probably recognize the voice in a few minutes. In the meantime, enjoy it. We'll come back with Kent Stedman in just a few minutes. On the web, one more time, Kent Stedman at cyberspaceorbit.com, and you can find this program and all the information about my radio show, the past shows that we've done, and information about upcoming stuff, all that on the web at MikeHagan.com. All right, Terrence McKenna and Matt Presti, check it out. It's Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
Culture, the whole thing is that culture and language tend to become trapped, and yet they can be the platform for enormous freedom if you understand what it's all about. And what it's all about is you. You are the center of the mandala. You are not marginalized in any way. And the message that the culture gives us is that we are marginal. It doesn't matter whether if you've got $100 million, the Fortune magazine will inform you that so do 10,000 other people on the North American continent. There's nothing special about you. This is part of the democratic legacy. We are constantly told you're not special. Special isn't special. Anybody could do it. What's a psychedelic? And so then when you look for guidance, direction, mentorship, we always look toward institutions. Well, I'll go to the university, or I'll go to the army, or I'll do something. Somebody will tell me, will give me a larger purpose. But it's really yourself that is the final arbiter. And if you keep yourself as the final arbiter, you will be less susceptible to infection by cultural illusion. Now, the problem with this is that it makes you feel bad to not be infected by cultural illusion, because it's called alienation, you know? But this is, I can't solve all problems. The reason we feel alienated is because the society is infantile, trivial, and stupid. So the cost of sanity in this society is a certain level of alienation. I grapple with this because I'm a parent, and I think anybody who has children, you come to this realization, you know, what'll it be? Alienated, cynical intellectual, or slack-jawed, half-wit consumer of the horseshit being handed down from on high? There is not much choice in there, you see, and we all want our children to be well-adjusted. It's unfortunately, there's nothing to be well-adjusted to, so that's a real problem. Yeah.
All right, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You listen to Radio Orbit. It's about, 25 minutes or so before the hour of 1 a.m. now on the 10th of July, 2007. Got my good friend Matt Presti in here in the studio with me playing music from, when did you write that one, Matt?
It's about 6 months.
Yeah, that's something you did really recently after you were sort of introduced to Terrence McKenna's work in the last couple of years or so.
Yeah, again, I got to thank Crux for that, Steve Lukowski. He turned me on to quite a lot of good things, and Terrence was one of them.
So. All right. Yeah, hello to Crux out there, too. He's in the chat room right now, I think, with a bunch of other folks, so we'll say hello to everybody over there. Dr. John's in there as well. And Chaos, a big thank you for getting that chat together. Everyone's really enjoying it. Okay, Barge Quill, Kent Stedman, you there with me, my brother?
Yeah, I got to strum my dobro for good luck.
All right, do it.
All right.
That's all it takes.
I won't put it on my lap. I'll probably...
You'll probably break it.
Hanging on the wall.
You know what, Kent? I have another special guest in my studio here, too, that wants to say hello to you, though. You know that?
Oh, cool.
There's a young lady whose name is Lindsay, who you were chatting with a little bit at our place a couple of weeks ago. Do you remember Lindsay?
Yeah, remember me, Kent?
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing
I think
pretty
I know
well.
Who you are. You're the fashion lady?
I've got the red hair. We'll say that.
All right.
The fashion lady. That's what I'm going to start to call her from now on.
No, she's a studying fashion design. I didn't.
Exactly. You remember. She's good memory.
Oh, yeah, he knows. Anyway, she and a friend of hers just dropped in to say hello. So
another person who I can't get out of my mind.
Oh, you're too sweet.
You didn't say it was a good thing. Maybe he's having nightmares.
Whatever, as long as they make a lasting impression.
Aha, there you go. That's right. Any press is good press, right? All right, let's get back to it, Bard's Club.
Well, Lindsay startled me, someone. I don't know why she startled me.
She is sort of startling, actually.
Yeah, you startled me. Woke me up.
Startling.
Woke you up. Yeah, you've been sleeping for quite a while. I have to wake you up every 10 minutes around the radio show. I got to shake the mic and say, hey, Bardo, don't forget we're doing a live radio program here.
Now, was it because of the conversation we had that startled you? Because it was a deep conversation for just a random meeting, you know, first time, solstice, Sundance.
He sort of does that.
Yeah, we were talking about creativity, weren't we?
Exactly, yeah. Art and pretty much the process of it through, I don't know, age.
Imagination.
Right.
Or I guess the, how can you say, the
there
step
are no
by
rules,
step.
Lynn.
No rules, exactly. I do remember that. But then also, you know, you kind of move through mediums as you age. And, you know, you get tired of one and it's okay. You just move to the next. So
I think it's okay to learn, you know, there's certain things like, and some people would even argue against this, but, you know, like on a guitar, you know, there's certain fundamental things that are helpful to know before you try to start to write music. Like it's nice to know how to make a G chord, or so there are maybe certain fundamental
elements,
but then once you master the elements, then it's your business to use them any way you see fit. Maybe
break the rules.
There are no rules, maybe even in that. But then Ken, I know guitar players who never learned how to play a traditional chord. My friend Johnny, remember John Kent, who was at the place on
he was great.
He's great, and I mean, people watch the way he plays guitar and they say, what is he doing?
Yeah,
because he doesn't do anything that any traditional guitarist even recognizes as a chord or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it sounds wonderful.
Yeah, and it just integrates right in.
Yeah, and he did.
In fact, people were grooving. They were all playing. Here we all come from different traditions and different parts of the world. We're all just sitting down and, all right, let's play, and we're playing.
Ken, this is a good chance for you to tell the story back when you were teaching art. Remember when you had all those students build dulcimers? 200 different people or something?
Yeah, well...
Tell that story, because I think it's a great example of how things can come together that you have no idea that it would even work.
Yeah, that was for one semester as an experiment, you know, with the agreement of everybody out there. I said, well, let's build a lap dulcimer, because I love the lap dulcimer in that it's a self-revealing sort of instrument.
Tell, for people who aren't real familiar with the dulcie, just a quick description.
It's a four-string instrument. Actually, it plays three notes, you know, the basic chord. Mm-hmm. I tune mine to high D, A, D, D, A, D. It's called the Mixolydian tuning. It's just a chord, you know, it makes a chord.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there are other tunings, but that's the basic tuning. And so if you can tune it, nowadays, if you have trouble tuning, well, you can hook it up to a gizmo.
That's right. They got these little electronic gizmos that
you can build it into the dang thing. When the lights all line up, you're in tune. But as soon as you get it tuned, by gum, you can play it, because essentially you play one of the strings and allow the other two to drone behind it, sort of like a bagpipe, you know, where you have the chanter and the drones.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful instrument.
It is a really great sound.
And self-revealing. I mean, you can do more and more and more with it as you go. Make chords and play Renaissance melodies. But the basic mountain technique is to sit it on your lap. There are two strings together like a mandolin, and then a couple of single strings behind it. You know? You play that one string and let the others drone. And you get these beautiful mountain melodies.
Melodic stuff.
And
It's
very related to, if you sit real quiet out in the woods, you can hear that drone, you know, which is the sum total of all the sounds. And so it's a very natural instrument, and the folks up in the Appalachians and the Smokies, they play that single string and, you know, play Appalachian, typical Appalachian sounding music. own the horses and ain't hungry. They won't eat their hay. That type of thing. And so anyway, I get a whole bunch. I say, well, let's all build these. And it was optional, but everybody wanted to build it. So you'd have at the end of the semester, you'd have 200 of these darn things.
From scratch?
Or? Oh, yeah. They're not hard to build.
They're not that easy, Kent.
Huh?
They're not that easy to build.
Oh, mostly. Now you tell me.
Well, anyway, I mean, it's... anyway, so yeah.
Oh, listen, you can take the keyboard and put some strings across it and a couple of tuners and lay it on a table and play the table. I'm not kidding. You can play a window pane. Anything that has any kind of resonance. You lay your... You can do that with a guitar. Take the dang, throw the box away and just take the... the neck. Go lay it on something. You got a guitar.
I think I'll keep the body of my guitar intact for now.
Nah, throw it away.
All right, so what happened when you had 200 dulcimers and everybody brought them in or what?
Well, they'd all furtively start strumming real quietly. We'd do our best to get them in tune, you know, mm-hmm. which was impossible.
Yeah. Right, 200 of them all the same in a way.
But I found something out about that that's really interesting.
What?
If you have 200 instruments that are out of tune, they're in tune. In a very bizarre sort of a way, they are in tune.
Because you told me that when everyone started playing, that it actually sounded beautiful.
Yeah. But we, you know, after working with it, we would get them all in tune, but I was fascinated as to how it sounded when they're all out of tune. I was amazed. Because in a way, you have that many strings playing, and they achieve some sort of harmony, whether you're trying to do it or not. Matt, you there?
Yes.
You ever heard of anything like that?
What do you make of this, Matt, as a musician? And we've been talking about sound and resonance all night, ever since Matt got to town for 4 hours. So this is the theme, so whether we like it or not.
And they'd start strumming back and forth with a little plastic pick or whatever they had. They use a feather in the Appalachians. They use a feather quill to strum it with. Some had that, some had picks. Mm-hmm. And even if we weren't in rhythm, a rhythm would appear. And even if they weren't tuned, a sort of harmony would appear out of all the different strings, and a harmony would manifest.
Now, did everyone hear this, or was it just kind of you or someone who...
Had you just eaten a lot of mushrooms?
Well, it was the 60s, I don't know.
Right state of mind.
My class looked like a gypsy camp.
But so Lindsay's question, though, honestly, did other people experience, you know, the same sort of thing that
yes,
you did?
Yes, they did, because you could tell because they're all suddenly really quiet. Even the jocks in the back row were really quiet. They were really concentrating on what was happening. You know.
Well, there is something weird that happens in a group environment when people are sort of focusing on the same thing, regardless of what it is. You know, you see weird energy. What's the word I'm looking for? You see energy move between things like an audience and a band, for example. And it's not an individual energy, it's a tangible energy from the audience as a whole. They all sort of seem to be working together at certain times. And the band, and again, we can ask Matt about this, but as a person who's played on stage before and actually had people there at times, you know, enjoying it, I know what it's like in at least a little bit to get that energy, and it is tangible.
Sometimes that energy happens when you're ignorant, you know?
Well, that makes sense why I'm getting it.
No, I'm thinking back. Not only did we get these amazing sounds out of untrained musicians strumming on a dulcimer, all 200 of them. Oh, I'd teach them a tune or two. I'd teach them Flies in the Buttermilk, two by two. You know, I'd at least let them go away with that. But, I mean, the best band I've ever been in was called the Dog Paw String Band.
The Dog Paw?
Yeah.
Dog Paw.
And
sounds like a beer.
And
give me a dog paw.
We didn't know diddly squat about anything, but we'd go sit in the kitchen and learn five tunes. Then the next thing you knew, we were on the stage at the Wild Blue Yonder, where there were where they'd have a folk night. We'd end up there on Monday night, usually, playing music, but there were some really great musicians across that stage.
Sure.
We go, but we were so darn ignorant and stupid about the whole thing, but what we did is had one hell of a good time. We'd play our five tunes, and then when somebody'd break a string, we'd take a break, you know, and Willie's fixing his string, or somebody'd get off the stage and go take a leak, you know. But there was all this banter going back and forth between the members of the band, you know, teasing each other and just jabbering. One guy, Phil, his name was, he said, "I can't play music." He says, "I don't want to play." He says, "I'm not playing." I said, "No, you're in the band." "Too bad, Phil." So he says, "Okay." So he shows up. He cut all the strings off his dulcet, and he just strum it without a string. He was so damn funny looking that he was a really integral part of the band. He seemed like a hound dog. But we had such a good time that we couldn't figure it out because all these people were lining up here at the Dogpaw String Band, and we play our five tunes and play them over again and tell jokes, hit each other over the head with a fiddlestick and things like that. We were so damn ignorant about the whole thing that it worked. And the more we got serious about it, I don't know why.
Well,
for a while there, it got worse.
No, Matt, you chime in here. I want to hear your experiences about being on stage and your perceptions of crowd and energy and this sort of thing.
Oh, it's nice to be in the zone. You know, it's nice to be hitting the tune hard and making it cross to the people. But there's times that you dread when it's not coming across, and the energy of the band is, you know, not in the zone. And it's a nice place to get to. It's what I strive to get to every time I play, you know, to do the best I can. And mm-hmm. There's been a lot of times, you know, the blues band I play in called the Road Trippers, and we play here and there in, you know, the Ozarks, and
songs from that. I don't know if we'll play Road Trippers, but it's very bluesy and real cool.
Right. There's times where we just totally bomb and end a song at the wrong point and just, you know, it's like, you know, everyone's drinking, say a couple cuss words and move on, you know.
Right,
the crowd into it.
You're both reminding me of that scene from the Blues Brothers when they play in that country bar. All they do is play Rawhide over and over again behind a cage, and they're throwing bottles.
There's alcohol flowing. It's a good place to hide behind, you know, if you make a mistake.
Yeah, I'm glad to report that the members of the Dogpaw String Band got better over the years. In fact, one of them is pretty much a professional fiddler right now.
Was that Henry? Or Hammond Harry?
That's Noel.
Oh, well, Harry's
my
a hell
friend
of a
Noel, he's a 300-pound ex-linebacker that decided to become a fiddler. And he's now got a Noel Monteleone, I'm going to say his whole spiel over there. He now has his own, in Morro Bay, California, he has his own music stage and sort of ale house.
Oh, really?
Nice. He's really gone doing what he always wanted to do.
Well,
and he's great. He's
really?
Great. He's Charlie Daniels.
Holy cow, really?
But now there's a guy, see, he liked to play traditional music, but he lived on an island away from the music, the mainstream folklorist type of people that sort of the hall monitors of what original music is supposed to be. And so he developed, he doesn't play any of the old tunes exactly correctly, you know, because he wasn't around anybody except himself. So, but he developed a sort of sound all by himself that's just amazing.
So,
in fact, I just saw a Kris Kristofferson movie, I forget what it's called, about a bunch of old whiskey runners. I think Noel was in the back playing his fiddle back. Because they're all Maui residents, you know, and pals.
Huh. Yeah, Kristofferson is another one. I mean, God, every time I hear a song that I don't know who wrote it, he's my first guess.
Yeah.
And my second one is Bruce Springsteen. And I'm usually right. One of those guys writes everything that I don't know. That's a great one to say, well, who wrote that song? I don't know. Probably Kris Kristofferson. Hey, it was. Prolific
song. You know, I'm I was really moved by what I heard around the old campfire there at your place.
Where, at our place?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I tell you.
I was really moved. The poetry just really moved me. I mean, there were different styles and different people with different styles.
Yeah. Well, I know you enjoyed Lucas, who was there, Lucas Klotzbeck, who's a great poet and
plays guitar. He sort of growls it out and talks it out, but, man, I started listening and it blew me away.
Yeah,
you know, I love the kind of lyric, the straight talk. It's sort of straight talk.
Well, there's a very vibrant art scene around this area, around Columbia here, primarily because there's all these young people that are here. This is the university, and I don't know, there's lots of great music, but there's also poetry and dance and fashion and, people that are interested in all this stuff. So for me, you know, Kent, it's just, and I'm so pleased that you were able to be a part of that whole thing because, you know, you're one of the elders, frankly, you know, and you're one of these guys that has been through more stuff than, you know, most of us will ever go through. And it's the art side of you is such a great gift that you give back to people like myself and younger people to show them that, you know, doing your art, there's nothing wrong with it. Using your imagination, your creative skills, it's not silliness and, the stuff of five-year-olds. It's actually the way to really live an enjoyable and, you know, friendly, happy life.
And fulfilling.
And fulfilling.
You can see that in your face when I talk with you. I can see the substantial life you've lived, you know, and I feel like if you've really done something that you've enjoyed and that you felt some kind of constant happiness or fulfillment through, then that's going to show in your older years. You're not going to be just some, you know, kind of bum or, I don't know, Walmart greeter, you know. You're going to still be out there. You're going to be young and vivacious still in the eyes, and I think that's definitely what I saw.
Yeah. Well, I was nervous coming into a camp of, to tell you the truth, I'm not all that light. I was a little bit nervous coming into it. I hadn't picked up my dulcimer for almost 6 months. But I felt so accepted there, so I'm really very happy that happened.
Well, I'll tell you what, if the boss comes to my house and he ain't accepted, the other people are leaving, I tell you that.
No, to me, to sit down and, you know, all these different kinds of music, there are lots of different kinds of music, and be able to just peel my way through it, it's okay, you know.
No, it was awesome.
Thank you, that was cool.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too, and I didn't get to play as much as some of you guys, but the couple times that I did sit down, I really enjoyed it too, so there was a lot of real cool stuff going on. Anyway, look, Bartle, let's talk for a few more minutes here, and then we'll take a break a little bit closer to the top of the hour. We got five more minutes. We'll talk a little bit more with Lindsay. It's an interesting opportunity, actually, to talk to a young lady who's around town and has her own ideas about, you know, what's going on and what should be going on. So I'm going to pick your brain for a second, Lindsay. You're,
go ahead.
What do you think about the whole business of art, and what's your art? What do you like to do for art, and do you think that it should be a primary focus of someone's life, or is it just this peripheral thing that you do if you have time for?
That was a lot in one question.
What do you think about art? Is it a big player in your life? Is it a big part of your life?
Definitely, you know, and I feel like it's still something that's evolving from an initial, still something that's evolving from, you know, a seed, I guess, that was planted a few years back, but
Did you have a guiding force, somebody who was an inspiration with regard to some particular form of art, or were your parents artistic people?
No, parents aren't really artistic, unfortunately. But I guess it just kind of happened that, you know, you meet the right people, you go to the right kind of opening, or you see something that really moves you, and it just kind of clicks. Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like as of now, I do like to sew. I like, you know, the fashion end of it, but I feel like that could easily kind of fall through, or, you know, I remember speaking with you, Ken, about, you know, just writing novels or, you know, short stories, you know, kind of fictional things and creating characters in your mind, and I can definitely see that being something, you know, like a higher, I guess, level of creativity that I don't think I could never do as of now, you know, so it's that process. Mm-hmm. Starting from what really, I guess, initially makes you creative and want to pick up some kind of craft and start with it.
Ken, there was...
One thing leads to the next. You just don't know if you... For me, if I... you have to struggle. You have to struggle, and you have to self-doubt a lot, and then you have to crash and burn. I know how to do that really well.
In a literal sense, you're like literally on your motorcycle over the cliff.
I definitely agree with the fact that, you know, you have to lose that sense of self or unfamiliarity, you know, to really strive and, you know, reach rock bottom to kind of grow, you know, and definitely learn from what's happened, or, you know, just realize if you've, you know, down to the basics, necessities, you know, I feel like that's what creativity grows from. But
fabric is awesome. The fabric itself, if you listen real close, it'll tell you what to do.
that's
awesome.
Who was it? Was it Michelangelo, or maybe it was? Oh, I don't know. Maybe it was one of those other alchemists. But I think he said that the form of the sculpture was already there in the stone, and all he did was remove that which was unnecessary.
He chipped away, you know, into what, became the statue.
Right, right.
That was Michelangelo.
I was thinking it might have been, I can't think of who I thought it was, but I guess I thought about the right one. So, anyway.
I knew an artist named Christo. I was familiar with him. I didn't know him personally. He did some really wild things with fabric, like he built a 20-mile fence in Northern California out of fabric. Remember that? It was a big happening.
Yeah, definitely. He did that, and he did something in New York, I think, with flags over, I don't know, Manhattan or something. I don't know. But, yeah, I saw it was the running fence, wasn't it?
And he built a curtain across a huge valley in, somewhere in the south.
See, it's that natural art that you can just kind of put anywhere, you know, where it's so out of boundary, but it makes you rethink what art is. And I think that's it's that constant renewal of mediums or art figures,
right. I think it's sort of what you always get back to, is that there really are no rules, and that anything done with the right intention and done well is art.
Yeah, and that goes for traditional artwork too. You know,
what do you mean by traditional?
There are times when I don't want to be the jack in the box and jump way out of the box. There are times I want to go sit down with some paint, like oil paint on a canvas, and paint a tree, damn it. You know?
Right.
Like it looks as best as I can.
You conform
it. Because that tree is an important dude.
And that's
the truth. And sometimes a tree will say, paint me.
Man.
And
I,
so
I
all
say
the,
other things
all
to
the
me,
exotic
trust me.
Ideas are flying away, and I'd sit down and paint the tree.
You can't say no to something like that. You can't say no to a tree.
All right, well, we're going to say hold on for a minute, okay? Top of the hour, Bartle.
Okay.
All right, hang in there for a second. Everybody, if you want to stick around, stick around. Lindsay, Matt. It's Mike, you're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We're about just a couple ticks after 1 a.m. now on the 10th of July. 2007. There's a post on the forum, actually, Bardo, about what is art. And there's a whole bunch of people commenting on what they think art is. It's actually a pretty interesting thread on the forum that people might check out. But at any rate, we'll play a piece of music here. You can take a snoop over there if you like in the meantime. And Matt, what should we play here? I think...
How about
Graduate? I don't have Circle of Friends loaded. We'll have to play... Or we can play Learn to Love. Learn to Love. That's a good one. All right. This is Matt Presti. When did you write this, Matt? Oh, I should have your mic on. Sorry.
2004.
All right. Is this an...
Released it on 420/04.
Ah, was this from the 420 Bandits?
Yes.
This is that project.
Yep.
Okay. Matt Presti of the 420 Bandits. This song is called Learn to Love. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. We'll come back in just a few minutes and talk a little bit more with Kent Stedman. And we're going to tell... I keep given hints about the time travel tunnel story, and we'll have to tell it after this song. It's Mike, listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Try to be something that just don't fit.
you trust in love, the darkness holds no sway.
That's Matt Presti. And I told you before the break that it was a song called Learn to Love. I hit the wrong clicker on my little clicker button mouse thing here. And I played Step Into the Light instead. But it's a beautiful song anyway. And I want to know who that girl was, Matt, who's singing backup on that song.
That's Lise Marie Walker.
Who's she?
And she's a vocalist that was in the Road Trippers with us and still guest sings from time to time.
They have a nice voice.
Oh, she's amazing.
Is she local?
I
mean, she's in the St. Louis area?
Originally
or Salem.
Salem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still making music. Jonesburg, east of here.
Does she do any other thing? Any other projects?
Yeah. She's got a lot of stuff she's done on her own. I got to just, you know, get her to get a computer and get on the MySpace phenomenon.
Tell her to send me some stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, okay, back to the man, www.cyberspaceorbit.com. His name is Kent Stedman. He's a very close friend of mine and someone who I have a tremendous amount of love and respect for, and he's also my brother. So, not really, but really. Kent, hi.
Hi.
Seattle, Washington. What's going on there?
Oh, it's a metropolitan area.
Yeah. All right, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about something like I don't know, maybe something like in back in the old days in the middle of nowhere, maybe in like the desert of California or something like that, maybe in an old mining town with a place called the Silver Dollar Saloon or something like that. I don't know.
All right.
All right, let's talk about it.
Well, let me just preface it by saying that my website has a lot of theoretical stuff on it. I mean, it drives me crazy. Debates over which galaxy we belong in, and whether there's a dust storm going on Mars. And a lot of debunkery and debate. New ideas flashing around coming from astrophysics and so on.
I got an email from Paul Avila today. I told you that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Dr. Paul, man, amazing stuff. That guy is amazing. Anyway.
Anyway, I feel like chronicling that, you know. But at the same time, you know, what's really important to me, and that I can really speak about, is stuff that's happened, you know, to
yeah,
me.
Experiences, yeah.
Experiences. And for some reason, the theory is good, but I recollect a lot because I have to, because stuff happened. And, well, what happened in this case, see, like Mike, at one point I bought a farm out in the country. It was pretty run down old farmhouse with a leaky roof. Kind of like Steinbeck country out there. But there was some land out there. I mean, why did I buy it? Because, well, when I'm teaching, a lot of people were showing up at my house for midnight chats and basic partying going on in town. It was pissing off my neighbors. And it was during the 60s. A lot of creativity going around. So I think I bought the farm so I could have a place out in the country to party, to extend the party, you know.
Yeah, that's why I did it too, believe
it. I was a younger man then. Hell, let's party. You know? So, quite a gaggle of people showed up out there, and artists and poets and musicians and Native Americans who built their sweat lodge on the back of my property, and a Aztec medicine man named Toshka, who was a real shock to my ex-in-laws, who showed up from Texas in their Airstream trailer. Their name was Taylor. Anyway, one night, the UFOs were a big topic back then, because down there in the San Joaquin, up along the ridges, and so a lot of them, A, were being spotted, and B, we saw some of them ourselves. And, well, one night, this feller who was part-time member of Argakers, we called it, came in with one of those old UFO magazines you used to see on the newsstand, you know, they're sort of letter size and sort of stapled together, but they sell them for a buck on the newsstand. He says, look at this, and he thumbed through it, and there was a map. The map had an X on it, and right next to that X was written time tunnel. Then it had about three paragraphs that said, well, basically, if you go down to there, this place out in the California desert, Mojave, that you'd experience a place where the time was diluted, distorted, messed up, and you could experience something in regards to traveling through time. So that wore on my thinking for quite a while, to the point where I decided, well, I'm going to go down there and check it out by gum. And sort of on the way out of town, I stopped by an old friend of mine. He's sort of a hippie biker type of dude. Salt of the earth. He's gone now. I miss him. But we call him Rump Roaster, Admiral Rump Roaster. Because every 4th of July, he was the one that ended up with these cool fireworks, and he'd shoot them out of his second-story window over Fresno. Like he was shooting a cannon, bow of a ship. Well, I talked to him. I just stumbled across him, and he said, well, yeah, he says, I've been down there, a place called Red Mountain, California. He says, if you get down there, you want to meet an interesting old guy. He's a miner that lives down there. He says, we've met him just by coincidence when we were biking through there. And it says his name was Bruce. And his whole name was Bruce Menard. I'm going to throw it out over the lines, although I don't think he's probably around anymore, because this was like 30 years ago at least. But he said, look, that guy... because he's sort of the philosopher in regards to what you're looking for down there. So that egged me on even more, because I was about ready to traipse off and look for a time tunnel, and here's Rump Roaster telling me, well, there's a guy named Bruce Menard, tell you all about them there time tunnels. So I got in my old beat up Dodge pick'em up truck and headed out over from Bakersfield, over a pass, and down into the Mojave. There, it's near the, another spooky aspect of that whole region down there is one of the top secret naval.
That's by China Lake, right?
That's, it's near China Lake.
Holy people, if you're not familiar with China Lake, there's a Google for you.
Yeah, look it up.
Just look it up. Or do a search on Kent's site for China Lake, and you'll find some interesting information.
It's a base on very ancient, holy, sacred land. Some of the rock drawings out in China Lake are unsurpassed anywhere in the whole Southwest. They're just amazing. I put some up on my website if you want to click through Kent's time tunnel story. They're just incredible. There are these beings, you know, with rays shooting out of their heads and multicolored sketches that are really otherworldly, that are called petroglyphs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, I show up about 6 o'clock in the evening. I make it to Red Mountain, California, and it's a ghost town. It's really a ghost town now, so I've heard. About the only thing that was still there was a sort of biker bar called a miner, biker, whoever was prospectors. Whoever was out there. See, that's heavy prospecting in mining country. There are like 30,000 holes in the ground out there from various mining expeditions over the past couple of hundred years.
Hmm. So lots of things underground anyway going on.
Yeah, I read this recently that there are like 30,000 holes down there. And people go out there on dirt bikes and, you know, they lose a lot of dirt bikers down in those holes.
Right in a hole, man.
Because when you dig,
hey, there's 30,001.
When you dig a hole in the ground, you leave.
Add another hole to the list.
you just lost
Ralph.
The tailings form a little mountain, you know, out in the flat of the desert. And so the dirt bikers, oh wow, I'm gonna go test my skill going up that mountain. They go up and over the edge and down 3,000 feet into a hole. So I go into the saloon at 6 o'clock at night. There's maybe a dozen people in there. And all the way driving down there, my imagination was going wild. Man, am I going to see a time tunnel? Am I going to see a region where time is busted up like a vortex out in the desert? And so in a sense, I was already doing time tripping all the way down there, which, you know, I figured that out later. It's the mind that goes there.
Okay.
And so I was all wired up. And I walk into this place, and I had a beer, and then I just plunked it down the table, and I says, is there a goddamn time tunnel around here? You know, I'm looking for a time tunnel. And there was this dead silence around the saloon. But then, as the evening wore on, people started edging my way. And
you tend to have that happen to you. I know many people do that around.
And
you.
I responded.
There's nothing special.
Yeah, I responded, you know, graciously by buying a lot of beer. Well, as the evening wore on, the inhibitions went down and the silence, sort of, who the hell is this guy, deal wore off. And it turns out that my exclamation, I want to see a time tunnel, was not all that unfamiliar sounding to some of those dudes that were in that bar. Now, I'd say there was a few bikers passing through, but most of them were prospectors. They're still out in that desert. Digging for gold, platinum, or whatever they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an old guy. I asked if there was this guy named Bruce Menard, and I got the real silent treatment. And, you know, I'm thinking back on this time. There's an old man in a wheelchair sitting in the corner with a big full beard. When I illustrated my story that's on my website now by trying to find pictures of people that looked like him. So I got it pretty good, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some great illustrations and photos that go
along
with
this. Yeah, they're just random people. They're probably mad at me for stealing that. Mugs off the internet. But I was trying to, it was helping me recollect by finding people that looked like them. But to this day, I'm haunted with the fact that that was Bruce Menard. Just the way he looked at me and the way I looked at him and the way he didn't say anything, but he just sort of drifted out the door because I was such a obnoxious son of a gun or something, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But I met some other guys, a guy named Bird, the reason he was called a bird was twofold. He looked like a bird. And he sort of pranced around like a bird. He had that those bird-like movements, like a hawk. You know?
Uh-huh.
And Bird was actually from Bakersfield, but he spent half his days there in Red Mountain because he had a claim out on a place called Iron Mountain. Now, that was, as I recollect, the location I was looking for, a place called Iron Mountain Canyon. That was the X on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And B, he was called Bird, and his buddy, partner, that was with him, kind of looked like Gabby Hayes. So, I, you know, in my mind, I call him Gabby.
Mm-hmm.
And
like the old, yeah, scruffy, bearded prospector type.
They were a weird pair. They were always digging each other, you know. But Gabby said, well, the reason he's called Bird is he thought he saw a bird. I said, what do you mean, I thought I saw a bird? Well, Bird, rather sheepishly, under the gaze of Gabby, began to talk about the fact that he saw, he claims, one night, flying over his camp, a dang prehistoric bird.
What
am I talking about?
A pterodactyl or something.
I mean, yeah, he was talking that he saw a pterodactyl, a freaking pterodactyl fly over his camp. And then as the conversation,
so
there...
So this is the 60s, though? So...
yeah, I know. But the problem was, is there was a kind of hush that came over the crowd when Bird talked about his pterodactyl. And that hush is a result of another guy that was not there who was a Shoshone miner of Shoshone blood. That's Native American blood. Who was a, kind of the hero of all these miners, because he was dragging in a lot of what you call black gold. And black gold is something that they didn't know about a lot of these miners originally, because it's a desert varnished gold. The heat of the sun turns it black. And it kind of lays around on the surface of the ground, but it doesn't gleam like gold.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly this old guy was just pulling off the surface of the ground, on surface, these black rocks that turned out to be gold. You know, like he was bringing in 20-pound nuggets of gold, 40-pound nuggets of gold.
That's a lot of gold.
And so he had the respect, this Shoshone, who was not there on the scene, of everybody there, because he was the one pulling in all the gold. And anyway, the Shoshone told Bird that what he saw was the Thunderbird, the legendary Thunderbird.
Mm-hmm.
And he is serious about it.
Yeah, I mean, and for people who aren't familiar with this idea or whatever, I mean, there's actually some very strange stories about big flying things in the not-so-distant past. I mean, within the last 100 and 150 years, Kent, we know we've seen some very strange photos, right?
And in my archive, not too far back in time, there's reports of people seeing it recently. Now, how could a pterodactyl or prehistoric bird appear in our time without being reported in the New York Times? You know?
Mm.
How could it be obscure? I mean, if something like that exists, how could that be? I mean, we live in a sophisticated culture, don't we? I mean, we don't believe in that crap, do we? But the Shoshone told him that, yeah, that Thunderbird will appear, and he comes out of hiding. I said, now, whether that means, I asked, I said, what do you mean? He's down in the mines, down in the tunnels? And Bird said he didn't know. He said that coming out of hiding might mean something entirely different, might have a transdimensional, that's my way of putting it, concept to it, too. Like some people believe Sasquatch is a denizen of a slightly different dimension that can cross over into our world, you know, under certain situations, such as a time tunnel or a fracture in space-time. So anyway, Bird was called Bird because of the Thunderbird.
Now, would you connect that with, like, the Bermuda Triangle at all? Do you think it's the same concept?
Kind of do. I mean, that's a way to pad it, a way to go, if you're going to jump out of the box and think about other things. Maybe a way to go. There's another phase of existence that interpenetrates our own. Over the years, I've come to believe that there's some legitimacy to that, because I've talked to people that have traveled to other parts of the world, you know, exotic places. And I've talked to people, for instance, that were in Vietnam, that saw stuff. In Vietnam, they were using a night scope, an infrared scope, that... since then, they've redesigned it. What we have are kind of green scopes. I don't understand the technology thoroughly. But back then, they had a kind of red scope. I mean, you look through it, the things look red.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, some of the GIs reported back that they were seeing stuff through that infrared scope that shouldn't be there.
Energy signatures of something that was invisible or something like that?
Yeah, beings.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, I've talked to other people about it. He says, get yourself some old, I talked to a guy, he says, get yourself some old Kodak infrared film and do an aerial survey. And he says, if you don't know where to survey, fly over. He says, I'll, if you get that point, which I have not, he says, fly over and photograph down there in the infrared. He said, you'll see signatures of other existences that humans don't see normally, but maybe cats and dogs and bats do, you know.
Right, right.
The jinn, I like the jinn, you know, in the...
The Islamic tradition, yeah.
In the Islamic tradition, the jinn are important to the Islamic tradition. In fact, they have laws.
This is for people uninitiated. This is J-I-N-N, the jinn. It's a race of beings or super beings that is in the mythological sense exists in the Islamic culture, and this is the root of the word genie and all this other. There's a whole lot of connections to it, but essentially they were magical creatures, Kent, right?
They are magical.
And they are, yeah.
In the fact that in Islamic law, there are very specific laws, legal laws, on the books.
Don't mess with the jinn.
About messing with the jinn.
You know,
certain places that belong to the jinn, and you don't build a subdivision over those. You don't put your tent over those places.
Hey,
like
I wonder.
Petra, ever heard of Petra?
P-E-T-R-A?
Yeah.
Well, I know it's a German name for a woman.
Petra is a place somewhere out there. Wendy's been there. Jordan, I believe. That's these beautifully carved palaces that are carved into the rocks out there. Wendy says when she went there that...
That's in Lebanon.
Oh, Lebanon, yeah.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's outrageous.
She also went to Baalbek in Lebanon, which is one of the most astounding places on this planet, as far as I'm concerned.
Certainly the largest stonework that's ever been done that we can trace, and it's older than Giza.
But now we're theorizing, and I don't suppose the theories will get too far. They kind of echo off the walls unless we get ourselves some damn Kodak infrared film.
Well, I mean, I want to go to eBay and find one of those old night scopes.
But, I mean, after all, what was I doing? I was a hippie down there looking for time tunnels. What did I expect?
Right. All right, so continue along. What happens next?
Well, then this other guy, he sort of sauntered up. Now, this is a really straight-looking dude, you know, in looked like he'd just gotten off the golf course. You know, he was kind of peculiar to the rest of the crowd. And I don't know, I was all wired up and jazzed up and excited about this, my adventure, and I, for some reason that translated into me looking to him and say, I said, before he said anything, I said, "How's the sailing?" He said, "How'd you know I've been sailing?" And I said, "I don't know, but you've been sailing." And yeah, he says, "Yeah," he says, "I'm a yachtsman." "But how did you know that?" And I said, "I don't know. I just knew it." And then we talked a little bit, sort of a kind of particularly delicate conversation, then he left. Well, anyway, the other people around there said they didn't like that guy because he was a spook and was involved with the China Lake thing, the base, which is probably one of the most top secret bases in the country.
Yeah, I mean, yours isn't the only strange story, by the way, for people out there that come from this part of the country. I mean, there are some bizarre stories that come out of this China Lake area. Anyway, and for years.
Well, a story quickly evolved in the crowd I was in after that guy left. And the story that came out was that China Lake was a very sensitive facility, and super sensitive now, because a UFO the size of a football field hung over the main entrance to the base. Now, the main entrance, they said, and I'm not sure this is accurate, even to my recollection, but they said the ground opens up like the iris of a camera out there. And you'll see a bunch of guys on tractors plowing up fields, but those fields are the top of an underground base, and if you go into it, the ground will literally open up like a big lens of a camera.
It's like from a James Bond movie or something.
Yeah.
You know, the way the volcano opens up and there, you know, Dr. No's down there doing his business.
Yeah, well, anyway, I'm recollecting, and I also recollect the student of mine that told me he was blindfolded. He's a medic, and he was flown into that base one time to pick up a heart attack patient. He said they blindfolded him, but he said he knew it was his time late. He said he went down to the 7th level below ground, pulled out a heart attack patient. And well, all these buckos in the bar, these braceros of the prospectors, told me that that base is actually tunneled all the way to another naval facility. And I can't think of the name of it right now, but it's on the coast, Northern California. Well, not Northern California. I think it's around Santa Barbara area.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the big talk was that a UFO had hovered over the base, and there wasn't anybody there that had seen it, but it's like they all had, because people they knew were talking about it, and some said they actually saw it, or they saw an atmospheric sort of disturbance out over the base that night. A lot of lights, you know. And they also said that there was some seismic activity during that event, that the ground was moving. So that's another thing that came out of my recollection. Red Mountain, California. I went out and talked to Bird. We took a break, smoked a cigarette out in the outside there, and I didn't like Red Mountain, California. It was a spooky place. It looked like it felt like a damaged region of the earth, damaged. And since then, I've read of how plowed up and dug up that whole place is out there. But I mean, the rocks didn't look right. They looked melted and twisted, and as though somewhere in the ancient past something had happened there, you know, that it produced a lot of heat across the terrain. It looked like a ruined area of the earth. It wasn't the pretty desert like you see in the Disney movies, you know, the living desert. It was ugly and felt haunted and didn't feel right. Well, anyway, I asked Bird about a place called Iron Mountain Road. It was getting pushed around midnight, and he gave me the directions to it. And so I left the Silver Dollar Saloon and drove up towards, I think it's more of a northeast direction, but I'm not sure, it's been too long, until I found what I thought was one of the side roads that took off of the paved road. According to his instructions, that was Iron Mountain Canyon. And that was where the X was on my map.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, I went up there a ways, and I saw a pull-off on the side of the road in my headlights. So I pulled off.
Was it night?
Yeah.
Dude, you're crazy.
Huh?
I said, you're nuts. Running around there at night.
Nobody around except me.
Oh, God.
And I pulled off the edge. It's an unusual place because it's sort of a flattened out pull-off, and you could drive your car back maybe 50 yards off the road and to what looked to be a parking lot or a landing area of some kind. And then I got out and got my flashlight up and walked back a little ways, and here was a tunnel. I mean, a tunnel. It was almost a perfectly circular opening. It was not like an old cave with a squarish looking or sort of hacked into looking. It was a perfect tunnel.
Like somebody put a cookie cutter against
it. Like somebody just drilled with a giant drill in the side of the mountain, which may have been exactly what had happened. You know, I've read recently about these big drills that they're using for various projects. They run them in on tracks, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've seen some of those tunnel boring machines now,
yeah,
too. You know, my God. They got stuff that'll blow your mind. I had that guy Richard Souter on the air.
Yeah.
Remember him? He's an expert on, you know, underground bases and all this stuff. And the information that he brings is pretty much stuff that's in the public domain. It's just very few people know where to go to look for it, and so, or have the gumption to look for it. But man,
it was bizarre looking because I don't recall seeing huge tailings. You know, if you're going to dig in the side of a mountain, you're going to,
yeah. Where's your anthill?
Where's your anthill? It just was a continuous with the existing terrain, more or less, except there was a hole. It went straight back in. I'd say it was about 20 feet in diameter. Big. And the inside of the tunnel kind of looked coated over somehow. There was no boards or anything.
You know, Souter talked about this machine that was used, that was developed in the 80s, he said, but I mean, the odds are that it was probably earlier than that. But at any rate, it was actually a tunnel boring machine that's big, like you're talking about. I mean, big, like 75 foot diameter. But what it has is an active nuclear reaction that's operating at the core or at the front end of this thing. And what it actually does is use that continuous reaction to heat the front of this thing and melt the stone as it moves through the earth. So it actually melts through a nuclear, you know, reaction. It creates heat, melts the tunnel as it's moving through, and then as it moves through, it cools behind it. And so you're left with exactly what you're talking about. And you don't need, and in other words, it becomes like a you know, an amorphous solid material that surrounds it. Because
it didn't look like a mine in the fact that I'm not really an expert on mines, but you think when you're going in mining, you're sort of,
you mean you didn't hang
different
out in
directions and things like that to follow the veins.
Hmm.
Whereas this went straight back,
mm-hmm,
straight back in a straight line. So I had my lantern. I don't recall tracks either. There was kind of a bed there, as I recall. In the fact, there's a lot of loose rock that I walked on going back, kind of a slightly flattened out place at the bottom of the tunnel. So I went back, and I kept going back, and I kept going back, and I kept going back. I bet I went back went back until I got really nervous because I thought to myself, well, what if my flashlight burns out, you know? Then I have to feel my way by touching the walls to get back out of here, because if you turn the lights off, there's no light. And I thought about it. Whatever. Well, at that time, I started hearing a pinging sound way down. Those tunnels must have a certain acoustical property to them. But I began to hear like a ting, 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 somebody hitting a piece of iron, like an anvil sound.
Mm-hmm.
Way deep down, and I thought, oh man, I don't know what that is. It, you know, explanations went through my brain. Maybe it's acoustically picking up something 20 miles away, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Just amplifying it, like a waveguide.
Oh God, who knows in a chamber like that?
Ding, ding, ping, clang, clang, way back there. And I thought, well, does that mean there's somebody back there? Am I in somebody's damp tunnel? Project. So I went back out, and then I sat in my truck, and I thought, well, it's late. I got to camp, you know. And it was cold. It was a cold desert night. As I recall, it was not quite summer yet. It was more like late spring. And I thought, well, so I grabbed my bag, went back into the tunnel, and went in 100 feet and found a place and backed up. I'm going to stay here, damn it.
So you're going to camp out inside this thing?
So I camped out inside the tunnel. Well, I started to drift off to sleep, and my imagination was already pretty fired up. In fact, I was a bit squirrely. Scared, you know. There I was in this stupid tunnel. But I started to drift off asleep, and then something happened to me that has happened off and on during my life. There was a sort of energetic thing started happening. Now, Matt, you might know when you play really pretty music, you get a sort of chill.
Right.
But this became an amplified. It started that way, like a chill going up my spine, as though it was an ecstatic experience. But then it got worse. I'm saying worse.
Something's going
to
happen.
It got more powerful, and it seemed to have a cadence to it. It would build up like woomba, 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 woomba. Woomba, woomba, woomba. And then it built up to the extent where my reaction was to get the hell out of it. And I had all kinds of scientific talks, like maybe this is some kind of waveguide, you know, that connects the base, which is not that far away. And I'm being irradiated with some kind of frequency, et cetera, et cetera. All those thoughts went through my mind, but none of them mattered because at a certain point, I couldn't move. I mean, if I wanted to get up and go back out of the car, I couldn't do it because this cadence build up, build up, build up, build up. And this is not an unfamiliar experience to me. Things like this have happened to me throughout my life, starting when I was about 19 years old. Each time it happened like this, I've gotten a little more used to it in the fact that I know I'm not going to just perish. But it built up, built up, built up, and then it reached a point where I more or less lost my brain ability to interpret what was going on. And then, to make this story frustratingly cut off and short, the next thing I knew was I was waking up the next morning. But when things like that happen to me, and it has happened more than once in my life, what takes place over the next few weeks, months, even years, is I started getting flooded with imagery that is really seems like stuff I've never thought of before. Ideas and things and places and concepts. And so when you read the story on my website, it goes into another level, and that's a sort of journey in, let it all hang loose, journey into the fantasy world, trying to allow for any of this imagery to just bubble to the surface and let it happen. And what it's basically all about is a travel through time. Time a long time ago, back in the early Greek times, and then sort of fractured up experience. I don't want to actually tell you about this. I'd rather have you go read
it. But you were mindfully there? Is that what you're saying?
When the event happened, I just sort of lost consciousness. I went into sleep. You know, I lost consciousness. But it wasn't like a peaceful, sound sleep because I was paralytic, sort of sleep state. And the next thing I know, I woke up the next morning, and the light was shining. The morning was shining through the tunnel, which was 50-100 feet away from where I camped. So now, in order to complete the tale, I don't know what to say, except maybe try to answer any questions or any similar experiences that anybody else has had like this. What happened, I will follow up with this. After I put the tale of Red Mountain, California on my website, a guy emailed me. Said, we're going down there and check it out. And he went down there and checked it out. And he said he felt the same thing. He said primarily he wanted to look for the petroglyphs, the ancient petroglyphs on the rocks. But he said the Silver Dollar Saloon is still there, but it either looked shut down permanently or it hadn't opened yet, and it was. And there are a bunch of bikers there. So he says that he and his girlfriend just sort of made an excuse to avoid stopping there. They didn't want to run in some scary looking dudes.
That's the only way, though, apparently.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd have probably, in my younger days, I'd have gone right up to him and asked him where the damn time tunnel is. But he went out in the desert and he agreed, I've got the account written there, he agreed that there's something wrong with that region of the desert. It doesn't look right. It has a melancholy feeling to it, as opposed to some other areas of the desert, like around Joshua Tree, places not that aren't that far away that are really beautiful, and have a almost magical, charming, ecstatic feeling to them. Living quality to them, even though it's the desert. But this region of the desert didn't feel right. Didn't feel right to me. Didn't feel right to him. It's like it had been destroyed. Well, a stupid military base gonna help anything. Who knows what they're doing?
Yeah, and it is weird.
They're doing a lot of high energy experiments out there. Now that's maybe what I could have gotten myself stuck in the middle of.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that lots of that psychotronic business is going on out there, has been for a long time. What do you make of, the reason I wanted you to tell the story was just, just to tell a strange story.
They didn't tell me that they found the tunnel, though.
No, well, I mean.
I found a picture of what looked an awful lot like it, and I've got it on my main website. Yeah, but. They didn't locate the tunnel. Maybe I gave them the wrong directions, or I can't remember which way that I went after I left the saloon.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't actually write it down. This bird told me which way to go. I wasn't even sure I was in Iron Mountain Canyon. I just
let me ask you this, Kent. Okay, you've had experiences like the one you just told us about in the cave when you camped, this building up of energy and then eventually to the point where you're sort of paralyzed and then it eventually abates or whatever, right? And I know you've told a number of different stories about how those things have happened to you in the past, including the one that was a remarkable experience when you were a really young man that basically got you thrown out of the Mormon church.
Yeah.
Which is a whole other story. But
well, they didn't really throw me out. They just pissed me off and I left. Because I told them about it and they said, well, that's the devil. So that was the beginning and the end for me.
Well, let me ask about this. My experience, and I've had weird things happen to me too, and you know a lot about it.
Yeah.
A lot of times when weird things happen, you mentioned earlier that when you look back at it, after a day has gone by, a week's gone by, a month's gone by, even a year, whatever, that sometimes information trickles out of it, stuff that you may not have realized in the middle of the experience or shortly after, but it starts to reveal itself over time. Would you say that the general revealing of these experiences is one that's a beneficial one for you, or one that's been, you know, negative and frightening? Because mine, for the most part, seem to be long-term beneficial, even though they may be confusing, frightening, disturbing, who knows what, in the midst of it.
Both, yeah. Just stuff I'd have never expected to ever have happened to me. You know? And when a sort of energetic cadence or pulsation like that first hit me, I was on a sort of vision quest up in a canyon during college. I was 19 years old. That's when I first had a very similar experience to this one, to the time tunnel experience. And at that point, it scared me because I thought I was done for.
Mm-hmm.
So powerful that I thought that I was going to not make it. But I pushed it away somehow. And that was probably the first feeling of the other. I mean, a definite feeling. Go stick your tongue in a light socket. That's how it feels. You know? It's not a maybe feeling. No, don't do that, kids.
Yeah, don't try that.
And well, then it would reappear over the years. Now, that was that experience in that tunnel, which somehow could have been a technological happening. I don't know. Or something about the tunnel itself. You know, you got all that rock around you, and you got a mountain around you, and you got quartz in that mountain, you know. It could be, what do they call it, piezoelectric.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's very little understanding about how telluric currents and all this stuff move within the Earth. So, I mean, you know, I was talking to a geologist friend of mine today, believe it or not, I was asking what he did on his vacation last week. And he said, well, I went fishing at this freshwater spring for rainbow trout. And he said this water comes out of the earth, and it's freezing cold. He said it's you know, 33 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And so it comes from deep within the earth. And I said to him, well, you're a geologist. I said, I don't get it. I said, I know that when you dig into the earth, that it immediately goes to 55 degrees and stays there for X hundred of feet. And then the further you get toward the center, the temperature rises. And once you get down past 1,000 feet, the temperature starts to rise significantly, you know. And so I said, so where's the water coming? Why is the water 33 degrees? How could there be this freezing cold aquifer down there somewhere? No, that's my answer. Well, there's just this area down there that just stays secluded. Well, in other words, we have no idea, you know. Nobody knows what the hell is happening down there at the center of the Earth. And
I don't think we totally understand water. I've been reading on the Internet about water that's way below freezing that's still in a liquid state.
Yeah, they can arrange it in these different crystalline structures now and get different physical properties out of it. It's so bizarre.
And they're saying that, you can't have liquid water on Mars.
And now we know that
there
are.
Because of the temperature consideration, and not only that, the atmospheric consideration. Right. But I'm not so sure we totally understand water totally. You know, it's so important to the life force, and it's found, you know, throughout our solar system, and probably throughout the galaxy in one form or another. But I wonder if there's I wonder if there's an intelligence to water in that it will adapt.
Like that movie, the Abyss, where the water actually is mindful and can take form.
And here's he's actually a very sophisticated engineer, and I showed this to John Sheliak,
mm-hmm.
you know, who's burning salt water by hitting it with the radio frequency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've seen the video.
He hits the salt water with radio frequency, and then it burns at like 3,000 degrees. It cracks the water into hydrogen and oxygen.
That's crazy. Fardo, I tell you what, though, I forget who said it, but you know what was it that not only is the world stranger than you suppose it is, it's stranger than you can suppose. And you know, we get little bits and pieces of that all the time about how very strange this whole business is of living in life, and you know, people seem to walk around in the mundane a lot of the time, not realizing that mystery is just around the corner or down in a time tunnel somewhere in California. You
big
know?
Mystery recently, if you start reading what's going on about our galaxy.
I know. Do we belong to this one or that
one? Do we even belong to
that?
We go.
Well, I'll tell you what, we belong in the automobile on the way home, because my friend Ruthie is getting ready to roll on in here and play some music for the rest of the gang, and Lindsay's getting that look in her eye like she needs a little rest. Me and Matt.
See, when I tell a tale, I put him to sleep.
Oh, actually,
no,
not at all.
You're a great storyteller.
He is the one. He really is.
No, that's a gift. That's an art. I'll tell you what.
I'll tell you what. No
kidding. New medium.
Well, I got a 2-year-old grandson. It works on him.
Well, it's working on us too, Bardo. So, anyway, tell everyone we said hello. And as always, I wish I didn't have to cut it short, but we got a boogie. All right.
Well, Lindsay and Matt, you're glad you're here to keep us company.
Great to listen to you.
As usual, my old pal Mike.
Our pleasure.
Say hi to Wendy for us.
Okay.
We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Bye.
All right, cheers. All right, Matthew, Lindsay, thank you for hanging around.
Well, thank
you.
You're
welcome.
Had a nice time. I'll see you soon, okay?
What a surprise.
Thanks for inviting me.
All right. You too, buddy. You hang on a second. We'll say goodbye to Lindsay. We're going to play one more song from Matt here.
Not your friend?
Not your friend. No, can't be not your friend. Because it's just not right, because this has all been about our friends. And so we're going to play...
There you go.
Graduate, I think. All right, we'll play... I'll get Not Your Friend in next time
cool.
around, okay?
Cool.
All right, everybody, it's Mike. You've been listening to Radio Orbit. We've had Matt Presti with me all evening. You got Ruth coming up with Crash Landing in just a few minutes to play some music for you. Big thanks to Kent Stedman one more time on the web, cyberspaceorbit.com. My site, Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. We'll have this up in the archives in the next 24 hours or so. And we'll come on back and talk with you next week with Bruce Raphael. We'll talk about archaeology and some very interesting things that are happening in China. And that'll be live from Beijing with Bruce Raphael and a regular Indiana Jones of the real world here that we'll have on back with us next week. So anyway, thanks again to everyone for listening, and have a great week. Cheers.
way, so don't you hesitate, cause the hour's getting late, so throw away the hate. It's time to realize, you chose to incarnate, you chose to be alive, so let go of the pain, come out of the rain, before you go insane, stargaze in your brain, there's no need to complain, gotta catch the train, so don't you miss the plane, cause we will never die, cause energy will change, you might think it's strange, but what I say is true, so don't you play the fool, search into your heart, and when you do your part, you'll know what to do in the Earth School. Everybody sucks, and everybody lies, so look into my eyes, are you afraid to die? Do you live in fear? But you can turn around, listen to the sound, the song of Mother Earth, she reaches from the ground, to the mountaintop, where we can see the show, and watch the sun come up, on the Earth School. Right now, y'all.